and welcome to this week's episode of the Swap Meet Podcast. My name is Daniel Hanlon.
And my name is Niall McCann.
And almost a week after the... No, a week on the nose after the last one. So that's something hinting at consistency.
It's a bit early now. Could be coincidence.
It's true, yeah.
You know, random, you know, if you're random number generating, there's a certain amount of...
It's random consistency.
Yeah, that's what happened in the middle of it, basically. Anyway...
I think we're also as low energy as when we started the last one.
Yeah, I would say that's true. Yeah,
we just need whatever the hot button topic is this week to kind of get the juices going. Last week it was.
God, it's impossible to tell, Dan. It's impossible to tell.
If evidenced by last week, yeah, it is impossible to tell.
Why? What was last week?
Fucking poaching sausages got everybody going.
Oh yeah, I can't. Oh, I said I'd make meatballs and I didn't.
Oh yeah.
I will for next week.
Oh yeah, will you now?
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting you to make me dinner, Niall. Don't worry about it.
My meatballs are good. You'd be like, oh my god, these are amazing.
If I was to follow up on every dumb thing I said on this, like, I would have no, there'd be no time left in the day, really.
If I followed up on everything I said, why, I'd be living in a paradise of my own making.
If I followed up on everything I said, I'd just like have a house full of like half started projects. Where I decided, this is stupid. I can't fucking write a book about the social relevance of 80s power ballads.
Do you consider them socially relevant?
Remember we were talking about it a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I remember us talking about it.
I don't remember exactly what we said, but I remember thinking that there was a social history to be penned, but I was definitely not the man to do it.
Well, maybe you should try. Maybe you should do a YouTube video.
In my head, I've already started it and given it up in the space of just... answering you there.
Oh, that's a pity. I started listening to this Lindsay Ellis lady on YouTube. She's very good. I like her a lot.
Is she... Was she review films?
Mm.
Loser.
Well, no, she more like sort of talks about them and...
That's even worse.
And analyzes them, you know? Which is interesting. And she skews very heavy towards Disney now in a lot of...
Why is that?
...situations. She likes Disney. What can I say?
Like the animated ones?
Yeah.
But isn't fucking next to everything a Disney film these days?
Yeah, basically.
Because
yeah.
Like technically speaking, Pulp Fiction's a Disney film.
Disney just see something that's working and buy it, and that's how Disney operate.
Yeah.
And then all the money goes into the Disney direction.
It goes to the Magic Castle or whatever it's called, Magic Kingdom.
Yeah, I've been doing this for 40 fucking years. You don't tell me how to. Yeah, that's
Mickey Mouse is tipping on 100 years at this point.
Like, he is, yeah, he's not far off it. I can't remember why. I'm sure South Park got the number right when they did that episode. Oh, you don't tell me how to roll my business.
Did you go and see fucking Han Solo?
I did not. I probably will at some stage. Because, you know, they don't have enough money.
But you'll go, whatever.
I'll go, yeah.
Whatever Star Wars thing comes out.
I like Star Wars well enough. I don't
feel like it. Like Kermode was saying, he was saying it doesn't feel like that long ago since the last one was out.
What is it like? Is it?
It's only a few months, really. Like,
yeah. I mean, it's. I don't know. You grind these things into the ground as well, can't you? How do you feel about Star Wars? You don't really give a shit.
I don't give two shits about Star Wars. I liked it well enough when I was younger, but it's not something I went back to. And I think I tried to watch them at some point. I think I got into it when they. When the DVD box came out, I think I got it of the three original films, and the set I got had the original films,
yeah.
the non touched up ones. Proper I think I watched them once around then and thought, I think that's about all I can expect to get from these films. Really, like, you know.
Yeah, they're interesting. I quite liked them. I wasn't crying out for more sequels or anything.
No,
I certainly wasn't crying out for a sequel a year. Forever.
Well, tough shit, Niall, because that's what you're getting.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. I probably will go see Han Solo. There's a friend of mine who's very, very, very excited to see Han Solo.
Is it a friend of ours?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, okay, I thought you might have meant Kieran.
Oh, he's probably
excited to see it as well.
He probably is, though. Is he a star? Is he...
I mean, if I had to guess, I would say yes.
Really? Because he's a real Star Trek guy.
Oh yeah, a lot of times.
No, I'm sure he's too sensible for this. But a lot of times, people pick their fandom and get very aggressive towards other people's fandoms.
But isn't it a thing where Isn't there, well, wasn't there a time when the two things would be made by the same person?
J.J. Abrams.
Yeah. So, yeah. Like, what is the point in picking sides when it's, like, the same dude?
Yeah, well, a lot of people don't really rate that Star Trek. And I don't rate it either, but for different reasons.
I enjoyed them well enough, the two ones I saw. There was only two, wasn't there?
No, there's three.
Is there a third one?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Which was all right as well. Yeah,
it was all right. I hated the first one. I hated it.
I didn't have the interest. Yeah, you need to be invested in something to hate it, though, don't you?
I just hated it on the principle that it made no sense and everybody behaved in a completely bats-arse manner that had nothing to do with anything. And everything that happened was the result of the magical red goo that did everything, depending on the situation.
I'd need to see it again. I don't remember anything about it.
I hated it so much. I was just like, oh, the time travel goo is now explode planet exploding goo, is it? Oh, I see. What will it be tomorrow when we needed to do something else? It'll just be the same goo, different day. That's what they were saying.
One of the Star Trek films I enjoyed the most was First Contact. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. It wasn't bad.
It's basically a zombie film, like, wasn't it?
Do you think? I suppose now you can say that. I fucking don't like zombie stuff anymore.
I mean, I like Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah, I like Shaun of the Dead.
I don't like...
I like a couple of the Romeros. There's a lot of good
stuff. I don't think
they're
as good as people make them out to be, though.
I do like the Romeros.
I think they're okay, but well, they're kind of shite as well.
I love Night of the Living Dead. Night of the Living Dead is genuinely creepy.
I liked the third one.
With the fucking kid.
Oh. I'd need to see Night of the Living Dead again. It's a long time since I've seen it. But I enjoyed the third... I think the third one was might have been the one I enjoyed the most when they were in the bunker.
Dawn of the Dead.
Day of the Dead. Yeah.
I don't know if I saw that one.
I mean, look, I haven't seen it in fucking 8 or 9 years. But the night I watched it, I was like, I enjoyed that. That was good.
I enjoyed the fuck out of that. I liked Night of the Living Dead. In fact, I think Night of the Living Dead is amazing. And I liked Dawn of the Dead. I think that was amazing too. And I liked Shaun of the Dead. I thought that was amazing.
Okay, of all of them, I probably liked that the most, to be fair.
It's very possible. But I just... Everything zombie now? No, it's too
well
much.
Then there was TV shows, wasn't there? There's iZombie, wasn't there? Yeah. What is it?
Samantha Mumba.
Oh yeah, what was that? Am I getting these things mixed up? There was one with Samantha Mumba, there's one with...
Boy Eats Girl.
There was Beth, Life After Beth, is that what it was called, with Aubrey Plaza in it?
I didn't hear that one.
I didn't hear it because she was in it. Like, it'll pop up on, like, Split Cider or something, like, okay. You know. There was... there was more, whatever.
Oh, there's loads, there's shitloads. There's that Irish one that's out now. What is it, The Cured or whatever it's called?
There's an Irish zombie movie out at the minute?
I can't... Fucking Tim from The Office is in an Australian one now.
Really?
Yeah, it's too much. And it has been too much for the best part of a decade.
There's so many... channels. Not TV channels, but just channels of delivery that need to be filled up at the moment that... They can make... They're just going to keep making things forever. And like, I'm glad all these actors can work and whatever. Like, you know... Eventually, they should let us make something.
We are making something.
That's true, yeah. We're just as bad.
Yeah.
It's not like there's not enough podcasts going around.
There's not. There's too few, too many. Too few, but not...
There's not enough good Irish ones.
Yeah. But the Irish are a peculiar race.
Yeah.
I get it very hard to deal with them. Sometimes. Do you not?
We're oddballs.
Yeah, there is that element to the Irish. But, I don't know. Do you know what I'd like to see make a comeback?
What?
Disposable 80s detective serials like Simon and Simon or The Scarecrow and Mrs. King.
I don't know what either of those things are.
Remington Steele?
I know that name, but I don't know what it is.
MacGyver.
Yeah, was MacGyver a detective?
No, MacGyver was...
The lad that got locked in a lot of places and had to get out.
Yeah, he did get locked in places quite a lot. There was a recurring motif, but... I went back and watched that as an adult. It's not good.
No, I could have told you that. It's like going back and watching The A-Team. Like, why the fuck would you bother? It's terrible.
I've also gone back to The A-Team as an adult and found it quite enjoyable.
Really? The A-Team?
Yeah.
Do you think it's kind of dumb? Look.
Yeah.
Theme tune notwithstanding. That's like ground zero for theme tunes.
Like, what do you mean?
Like, it's like, what's a better theme tune than the A-Team?
Cowboy Bebop.
I mean, what was it? I can't even remember. What was it? Oh, yeah. I mean, it's not as memorable.
Well, you just haven't heard it as much as the A-Team. That would be my contention.
I suppose that's true. Apparently, when I was a child, the A-Team scared the shit out of me. The bit at the very start when Hannibal is disguised as a crocodile.
Oh, yeah.
And he's, like, smoking a cigar with the crocodile head in the back. Apparently, I used to cry when I saw that.
Apparently,
and the bit in the Hulk when it would close up.
It goes up in the eye. Yeah!
I was exactly same. Close up in the eye.
Really, yeah. Scared the shit out of me when I was younger.
There you go. There you go. The poor old Hulk. He never gets the love.
Do you know what I often think about the Hulk is that if you talk... Do you remember the piano music at the end of the Hulk? Na, 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 na. I remember thinking... I remember being on the radio one day and playing it and just going, if you said to a kid now, here's the theme tune from the Hulk and played that to them, they'd be like, how the fuck is that the theme tune for the Hulk? Na, 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 na. It sounds like it should be like fucking Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman or something.
What
like
was
it.
The theme tune for Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman?
I don't know. I don't even know what it is. I just remember the name.
Yeah, it was a hunky white man who was nonetheless kind of an Indian or something like that. I was built to address the needs of a certain type of middle-aged housewife.
Just fair enough, like, you know.
There's no question about it. MacGyver was built for my needs.
Yeah.
And you know, Mom had done
everything else. Everything these days is for fucking dopey 30-year-olds, like, you know, so why not? Like,
it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
I wish people would grow slightly up.
Well, I think kids and teenagers have just, like, I think YouTube is kind of their thing. They like YouTubers. Mm-hmm. I think all these like films that appeal to all us, they're like, oh, that's fucking old man shit, like the Avengers or whatever. Like,
superheroes, I love this old man shit.
It is, like, but God, my head's all over the place today. And I was,
why is it all over the place?
Because I had a nap. I should never have a nap. When I have a nap, I wake up like someone has just time traveled, like, you know, and I'm just so disoriented, like, you know, I've been asleep for 15 years or 15 minutes, who knows, like, and I woke up, and I went to sleep and it was sunny, and I woke up, it was raining.
Oh.
I was like, oh, what's happening? Like,
it's sunny again now.
Yeah.
But I did that, do you know what I did, weirdly, Thursday night, I got into the house, I fell asleep at like 8:30 or something.
Sometimes you just have to do it, like.
Yeah, but I kind of woke up briefly about 1 or 1:30 and sort of got undressed and got into bed properly. But I was awake the next morning at 6:00. So I came down and I packed my gym bag and went to the gym before work. And I'd never done that before, but I'd often thought of it.
How did it go for you? How did you feel afterwards?
It was wonderful.
You go, like, I walk into work, and usually by the time I get to work, I'm feeling pretty good, like, you know.
There you go, yeah, a little bit of...
And then I walk into the call center, and then it's like, oh, well, that's all the good work from that going.
I don't know. I'm too fucking lazy to say I'll do it again, but I would love it if I did it again. It's a good idea, I think.
But you've almost done a work... Do you walk into work as well?
If I get up early enough.
Okay, so how do you get to work?
Well, Mark, around the way, works up beside me.
Oh, right,
sometimes,
okay.
I get a lift with him. Or if worse comes to worse, I get a taxi.
Oh, okay. I was just going to say, like, if you walk into work, by the time you get there, you've kind of done a workout already, like, you know.
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
A workout, but you know what I mean.
Jog.
It's not nothing.
No, it's not nothing.
Do you want me to pull over that curtain?
No, I'm happy.
Sure.
Why, is that you?
No, I just, like, I'm just wondering when the line is. Does the line go further up or does it go down at this point?
What line?
The line where on you, the shadow.
Oh, I have no idea.
We'll soon find out.
It's just a matter of physics, Dan, and I have little to no expertise in the field.
Do you know, funny enough, from what we're talking about this week, I was talking to, I do this radio show on a Sunday morning, on the street where you live.
On the street where you live.
And,
I have often walked down the street.
Alvaro Lucchesi, who's a local actor who was on that show, he was telling me he worked with Alan Parker, because he was in Angela's Ashes.
Oh, is that an Alan Parker film?
Yeah, I didn't know that either.
That's interesting. Alan Parker's he's had an interesting career.
Yeah.
He's had a couple of his films are kind of in my personal favourite.
pile. And he made the wall as well.
Yeah, yeah, that's true, yeah.
And that's like, that's a weird fucking film. The only reason I watched it is because I'd never listened to The Wall, and then it's a good few years ago now, I was drafted last minute to be a guitar player in a production of The Wall. With these guys who were already the band I was in. So the band that was going to be doing it was me with a different guitar player.
Okay.
Which I can't remember the birth process behind that. I'm not sure why I wasn't there from the start.
Okay.
But this guy ended up being a bit of a washout, so they ended up drafting me in anyway, because I'm fucking reliable when it comes to this kind of shit.
It's more important to be regular than to be good.
Yeah.
Although you are quite good at the guitar now.
Well, it's one of those things. I was listening to this audiobook. What's your one's name he wrote? Eat, Pray, Love.
Oh,
I can't remember now, but she wrote a book about Jimmy the Book. She wrote a book about creativity, and she was going, her mother used to say to her that it's more important for something to be done than for it is to be good.
That's true.
So what was I going to say? But yeah, so I got into, I'd never really listened to The Wall before that. So what I did was I got into not just listening to the music, but I watched every documentary, My whole existence was The Wall for about 3 weeks. Okay. It was before I had like wife or anything, so like, you could just fill your head with Pink Floyd all day. I was thinking of it like a method actor or something. It's like, I just want to pack as much of this shit into my head as I can so that it's in the plane when I do it, like, you know.
Okay.
So and it came, like, we got props for it, like, you know, so it came out pretty well.
So, so it worked.
I just can't imagine any other scenario where you'd want to watch that Wall film. It's a slog.
Well, look, since we're talking about method acting and we're talking about Alan Parker, do you have any other opening thoughts, or would we jump straight into
should we just jump in, like, is it wise to do the old one or the newer one first, or should we start, does it matter?
Oh, I don't care. Yeah, do you want to do The Big Sleep first?
Let's do The Big Sleep. So Niall, I asked you to watch, is it Howard Hawks who directed this?
It is indeed Howard Hawks.
Howard Hawks,
a personal favourite of mine.
Howard Hawks or The Big Sleep?
Howard Hawks. Well, and The Big Sleep. He did direct it. But you know what we haven't done? We haven't done this week that this is the Swap Meet Podcast.
It is the Swap Meet Podcast. Now, this is how disoriented I am.
Don't be disoriented. And all that means is that every week we meet up and we swap a pop cultural artifact, a film, two films this week, or an album, or, you know, a book, or a, you know, type of cheese, or whatever we're into that week, and we swap it, we take it away, we live with it for a week, and then we come back and we discuss our thoughts.
Or for a day, depending.
Or for a morning. That morning.
So we get back together and we talk about it, and I'm like, you know, I feel like someone didn't shut down or didn't restart Windows properly, and now I'm all like all over the place. You know, when you're supposed to click, do you want to go through a full restart or just go for a normal restart? I think I went for a normal restart, and now I'm all over the place.
Well, I wouldn't worry about it, sir.
But I
tell
got
me
you,
about The Big Sleep.
I got you to watch The Big Sleep because recently I read The Long Goodbye, the Raymond Chandler book. And I was just sort of thinking about Raymond Chandler. And I realized that I had this DVD in my collection and probably never watched it, or just watched it once or whatever. So I thought, Niall, that I would get you to watch The Big Sleep. So am I even going to fucking attempt to fucking go into the plot?
I'm going to ask you about the plot.
Yeah, because I don't know what it is, to be honest. Like, you know, I think it's probably a lot clearer in the book, like, you know, but basically... Humphrey Bogart wears a hat, and here's a clip.
Here's a clip of Humphrey Bogart wearing a hat.
This is Mr. Marlowe, General.
How do you do, sir?
Sit down.
Thank you.
Brandy, Norris. How do you like your brandy, sir?
In a glass.
Yeah. I used to like mine with champagne. Champagne cold as Valley Forge and with about 3 ponies of brandy under it. Oh, come, man. Pour a decent one. I like to see people drink. That'll do, Norris. You may take off your coat, sir.
Thank you.
Too hot in here for any man who has any blood in his veins. You may smoke, too. I can still enjoy the smell of it. Nice state of affairs when a man has to indulge his vices by proxy. You're looking, sir, at a very dull survival of a very gaudy life. Crippled, paralyzed in both legs, very little I can eat, and my sleep is so near waking that it's hardly worth the name. I seem to exist largely on heat, like a newborn spider. The orchids are an excuse for the heat. You like orchids?
Not particularly.
Nasty things. Their flesh is too much like the flesh of men. Their perfume has the rotten sweetness of corruption. Tell me about yourself, Mr. Morrow.
Well, there isn't much to tell. I'm 38. I went to college. I can still speak English when my business demands it. Used to work for the district attorney's office. It was Bernie Olds, the chief inspector, sent word you wanted to see me.
You didn't like working for the district attorney, eh?
I was fired for insubordination. I seem to rate pretty high on that.
Yeah. I always did myself. What do you know about my family, Mr. Morrow?
Well, you're a widower. Millionaire. Have two young daughters. One unmarried and one married a couple of years ago to a man named Rutledge, but it didn't take. Both living with you and both...
Go on, sir.
Both pretty and both pretty wild.
So, doesn't explain much, really, but he's been hired to...
It explains as much as any of the rest of the film.
As much as the film does, yeah.
Yeah.
So he's been hired to... this guy's been blackmailed. The daughter, his younger daughter, apparently owes a load of gambling debts.
I'd believe it if all.
Yeah, yeah, they both seem the type.
She tried to shed in my lap when I was still standing up.
This is the thing, but the plot is incomprehensible to me. I'm bad with plots generally, but this was just like... I watched it with the subtitles on just to keep track of names and shit like that. Mm. So I feel like if anyone ever asks me did I read the book, I'm just going to say yes, because I might as well have, like, you know. But
or you could just read the book. I bet you the book's good.
The book's probably easier to follow, because what I did read... I watched a little YouTube documentary about it after I'd watched it. And apparently there was a lot of stuff that's in the book that couldn't necessarily make it into the film because of the
Hays Code.
So there was a load of shit cut out of the film that renders some of it like fucking nonsensical.
I was surprised how much did get in. I mean, there's a few drug references.
Yeah. Well, the younger daughter is totally fucking spaced out in one scene.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, but they always talk about her being high as a kite. She was high as a kite. Yeah.
I wonder what the drug was supposed to be.
I'd say it was marijuana. I've read a couple of the books, and there's a lot of reefer guys in them.
I suppose, yeah, that would have been around Reefer Madness time, wouldn't it?
Would it, yeah?
Yeah, I think so.
Fair play. I'm sure any time can be Reefer Madness time. If you want to make it that way.
But it's, it's kind of like a pretty, it's one of the sort of pillars of noir cinema, really, isn't it?
It is, yeah, it absolutely is that. And, it kind of works. It's got everything you want from one of those films, really.
Yeah.
It's got Humphrey Bogart being shit cool. It's got Lauren Bacall being shit sexy. It's got... that's what I wanted.
What I was reading was apparently another reason that your ones... The younger daughter's stuff got cut down so much was because Lauren Bacall felt like she was being a little bit upstaged and kind of kicked up a bit of a stink about it.
She's a good-looking... she's a good-looking woman,
like. But even just character-wise, apparently there was a lot of stuff that didn't make it in because it was... acting wise and everything else, she was being kind of upstaged.
Well, people, I did read a couple of sort of contemporary reviews, and people were not kind to Lauren Bacall in them, and I thought she was really good.
She was
really good. I enjoyed it.
What did they say? What was their beef?
Just that she was kind of a bit outclassed by the senior gentlemen who were wandering about around her. I didn't feel that way, I have to say.
I enjoyed it. Look. I'm not the foremost expert on old Hollywood. Like, before I saw this, Lauren Bacall could be here, and I probably wouldn't recognize her. Like, you know.
Oh no, I don't like her. She's in some good stuff.
Oh yeah, no, I know, but I haven't seen any of it, so I wouldn't have recognized her.
You've seen one of the big ones now.
What else is she in?
To have or have not, which I think would have been earlier than this. Was Mario at this stage?
No. They apparently got together on this film.
Okay, fair play. That's quite an age gap. How old was she there? In her early 20s?
Lauren Bacall, I thought she was a little bit older. She looks a little bit older.
I don't know. She looked young in it to me.
I know the other girl was only a teenager, I think. Or if she was in her 20s, it was like 20, you know.
Yeah, but she's playing younger too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a good film. Why did you swap it? Like, what was I thinking?
Well, because I wanted to watch it.
Fair play, simple as.
Yeah, that was it, really. Like, you know, and yeah. I'm going to do the same thing this week, I'm sure. Like, But, like, I know, I just kind of, like, I've read a lot of the Dashiell Hammett short stories and a couple of the Raymond Chandler things, and I just kind of like them as stories, like, you know.
Yeah, I like them too.
Like, they're always, like, they're just, like, a lot of the time they're funny.
Mm.
Like, the dialogue's always, particularly Raymond Chandler's dialogue is amazing. Like, yeah. I wish I had more examples, like, to give, to show people what I mean, but.
If you're giving me a look, I can feel in my hip pocket. I always remember that one. I can't remember which one it's from.
Even the one, the clip we just heard, I can still speak English when my job demands it. You know, like, shit like that, you know.
How do you like your brandy, sir? In a glass.
Like, every other thing he said, like, no man could be that witty. Like, every other thing he says is a line like that, yeah, you know.
No man could be that witty without getting a thump.
Yeah, yeah.
Although, in fairness, he does get a few thumps.
There's one real 1940s looking fight scene in it, where he gets beaten up in the alley, and you're like,
yeah.
I feel like I could get up after that beating, like, you know. Yeah. And I cannot take a beating.
Isn't it weird? All of those men were, like, probably at war. They saw actual violence.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was their best approximation of it.
It's just like, whoa, you know, like, come here. So they give you a bunch of fives.
Maybe, yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's how World War II was.
Yeah, well, you think it's been bigged up, that it wasn't as dangerous as they say?
It's not as bad as all that. No, I do not believe that, for the record.
Do you, like, are you into the whole noir thing?
Oh, yeah, I do.
You must have been deep into it for a while, because you made a comic.
Oh, I did, yeah, Bunny Malone.
Total, it was basically one of these, like, except yeah. It had a rabbit in it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I do, I really like them. I've read a fair few of those Raymond Chandler ones. I've never read Dashiell Hammett, maybe I should branch out.
I don't think he's as funny as Raymond Chandler, because I think Dashiell Hammett was actually a detective, so he's got a little bit more, is it the Pinkerton agency?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. He worked for them
when he was very young, yeah, because I watched a thing about Raymond Chandler on YouTube, and there was these two guys that were in the Dashiell Hammett fucking Appreciation Society or something, and it was a thing the BBC made in the 90s, and the lads were wearing, like, trench coats and hats, like, you know, and they were like,
oh my goodness,
we just don't feel like Chandler, like, felt it the way Dashiell Hammett felt it, like, you know, he was a detective, he knew, and he was like, you know, this guy was just writing from, like, his imagination, as like, oh god, what a crime. You know,
see, that's what I mean about fandom.
They were like, these are grown, these are lads in their 30s and 40s wearing the trench coats.
They all are. That's what I mean about fandom.
Yeah, it's tiresome.
It's like, I've decided that I like Dashiell Hammett. Therefore, I can no longer like Raymond Chandler and shall invest actual energy that I can spend in other parts of my life.
That clearly need attention.
Clearly need
especially
attention.
Especially your wardrobe, sir.
Yeah, yes. I will invest this energy on fucking actively denouncing this other writer who writes something as so damn close to the thing that I love that 90% of people in the street wouldn't be able to tell the difference.
And Dashiell Hammett himself was a fan, apparently. And it's just like, nope, not good enough for me.
People. People, people, people.
But,
I don't mind people.
I know, like, they're not worth it half the time. They really aren't. Like, but people are fucking terrible.
Very few of them mean harm. They're just a bit sort of, just very fucking self-obsessed, says the man with his own podcast. Where he spews his opinions onto the airwaves.
What do you make of Humphrey Bogart? Do you rate him as an actor, or is he just good at that one thing?
That's all you needed to be an actor back then.
Yeah, you kind of needed your trick that you did in all your films.
Yes, and then you got hired to do that trick.
Yeah, fucking simpler times.
Yeah, John Wayne was the exact same.
Yeah,
John Wayne only played John Wayne. Humphrey Bogart only played Humphrey Bogart.
I suppose a lot of those lads didn't live long enough to be like, you know, like if Humphrey Bogart was alive when he was 70, would he be like in some sort of deconstructionist fucking private eye movie or whatever?
I don't know, Dan, is your answer. I mean, he did die fairly young, didn't he? And then Sinatra moved in really creepily on Bacall, if I recall correctly. I think I heard that in
You must remember this. I love those podcasts while I'm listening to them, but as soon as they're over, I forget everything that was in them.
Well, so do I, and then sometimes I'll be watching, I'll see Lauren Bacall mentioned, and I had this vague notion that Frank Sinatra did something insensitive to her once. I hate that guy.
Frank Sinatra was pretty big on insensitivity at the time, I think.
Yes, he probably was. There's a lot of people saying that Farrow kid, that Mia Farrow's kid, looks, has grown up to look the absolute shit of him.
Of Sinatra?
Mm.
She
was married to him, though, wasn't she?
I'm not sure, but she was definitely like with him for a long time.
Yeah, but she was way.
She went from Sinatra to Woody Allen. You think about it, like, you know.
Got a thing for the older man.
Well, also, like, you've got this sort of this dude who's like known as being this sort of pillar of masculinity.
Alan wouldn't be that much older than her, really.
I don't know. I don't think so.
Just looked it.
But she went from like the guy, the man's man, the singer, but with the mob connections, to be like, actually, I think you'll find that, you know.
Well, look, that's somebody trying to solve a problem there.
Yeah, maybe correcting a little bit too much, you might say.
Overcorrection. Unquestionable.
This Sinatra's not working out for me. I think I need Woody Allen.
Here, pushover. I get no kick from champagne.
How do you feel about Sinatra? Mere alcohol doesn't.
I mean, he sounded like he was a fucking bully. Like, you know, like this is the thing.
There did seem to be an element of that, didn't there?
Like, this is the thing that bugs me about some of that stuff, is that he's this guy who's like singing, you know, I've got you under my skin, melting hearts left and right, and then leaving the stage and being, you know, reportedly one of the biggest fucking dickheads on the planet, like, you know.
Well,
having people, you know, beaten up or worse, you know. He had Jackie Mason beaten up, apparently.
Did he?
Yeah. I don't know what. Jackie Mason made some joke about him in one of his gigs in Las Vegas. And
Jackie, that was always happening to Jackie Mason.
I know, yeah.
People kept thinking.
He did, but he tells a story that he was crossing at a traffic light or something in Las Vegas the next day, and a car pulled up and lads just got out, beat the fuck out of him, got back into the car, and it sped off.
I get no kick from champagne.
Don't send all my letters to Mr. Sinatra.
Don't send them. But that's, do you remember in Spinal Tap, do you remember your man from The Godfather and City Slickers?
Oh, yeah. What is that actor's name?
I can't remember his name. It was very funny. And I went, no, what do you think should have called that?
It's Bruno Kirby.
If Sam Frank Sinatra says I can't breathe. They don't know life.
When you've loved and lost like Frank, are you just like, what are you talking about?
People Sinatra. Get way into Frank Sinatra.
I know, yeah, but it's like a lifestyle.
A lot of big for Sinatra.
But it was like,
there's always been ridiculous, crazy nerd cosplayers, hasn't there?
Yeah, there has. Even if it's like dressing up like Sinatra, like I'm sure people did back in the day, like, you know.
Question. Well, you see, all you really needed was a tuxedo and a carnation, like.
Yeah, but where would you get a tuxedo?
You could rent it. There's two different places you could rent a tuxedo in Dundalk, like alone.
I suppose, yeah. But like he, I remember seeing the same thing about Glen Campbell, and there was a documentary about
Glen Campbell was an asshole.
Well, this is the thing. There was a guy at the very last 2 minutes of these BBC music documentaries, and then they try and sum everything up in the last couple of minutes. And this guy was going, I just felt like Glen Campbell was like the last vestiges of a more wholesome America, blah, blah. And literally like 10 minutes before that, Glen Campbell told a story about he was pulled over for drunk driving in the 90s and kicked the fuck out of the policeman.
I saw that.
Why does it... And like, we'll go on to talk about it later on, but like, fucking Bill Cosby had you on Lisa Bonet, is that her name? Yes. Kicked off the Cosby Show because of the film we're going to talk about later.
Oh, I don't think so, did
he? I think he did, yeah, because she was only 19 or something in that film, and she was topless. Yeah, and she did a magazine spread as well around the same time.
I thought...
And he was the guy fucking swinging the hammer as to what people should and shouldn't be doing with their bodies.
I understood that it was her getting pregnant by Lenny Kravitz.
I don't think so, man. I think it was more that she was seen topless in films and magazine spreads.
Jeez. Oh, here, we'll talk about her.
But that's like... But this kind of thing where it's like wholesomeness being sort of doled out by these maniacs.
Yeah, but you know? You're allowed to be in that, within that sort of culture, there's a huge blind spot. You're allowed to be a maniac man if you, like Bill Burr says, if you act like you got some answers, you're allowed to do whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah, I know.
It's ridiculous, but it's true. But poor old Glenn Campbell and his wholesomeness.
Yeah. Well, he went born again Christian at the end of his life as well. Like, and he so, I mean, like, that's more fucking overcorrection. Like, you know, yes. It's just like, oh, I knew people like that in America who had pretty insane childhoods and then found Jesus again later on and were the most judgmental fuckers you can imagine. Like, you know.
Yeah.
And it's just like
a convert.
Yeah. Like, and these people had, and one guy I knew who was only a young guy, you know, and he had like a few years where he was doing his drugs and having his sex and all the rest of it, like, and got super back into Jesus.
Oh Lord, make me virtuous. Super judgmental. But not yet.
The most judgmental, like, 22-year-old you can imagine, like, you know.
Oh, she's 22-year-old, he's going to have a lot of fucking rude awakenings ahead of him yet.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel very weird around people who would change their religion. And I'm including people who go atheist on that. I have no problem with people who just decide, yeah, I don't believe any of this shit.
Was that the atheist is?
No, not anymore. The atheist is like the kind of person who you have to argue over Doctor Strange because he feels science is worth defending. Yeah, fuck off. It's a film about a wizard.
Why did you go see it? What do you mean, argue with Doctor Strange?
Oh, it was on this Witter team. I'm going to have to give that up. On this Witter team.
They're all wankers, man. That's a fucking collection of douchebags. Somebody right felt there.
Doctor Strange was an attack on science because it was about a magical superhero wizard. And I just thought, why did you go see it? You had to know that it was about a magic wizard. The only acceptable Doctor Strange film would have been a Doctor Strange film where halfway through Doctor Strange decides, no, this magic is all shit, and went and did some fucking medical research. Why go see that film? And then come on the internet, and I got in a fucking argument with him about it. And he kept dropping fucking Karl Marx into the conversation. 24 fucking carats of fucking wanker there, let me tell you. Dickhead.
But this is the thing, yeah, it's Doctor Strange. Karl fucking it's Marx. Not called Dr. McAllister, you know, where you just follow a man through medical school who has a practice.
Doctor control subject. No. It's just like that kind of atheist, that kind of person who's decided they have it figured out and that's the way it's going to be. Anybody who, if you cannot find meaning in whatever religion you were brought up in, you're not going to find it in a different one.
What if I told you I was a Buddhist or something?
I'd say, good on you, Dan. But in the back, I'd think something quite different.
There's some Buddhist things.
I got a lot of time for Buddhism. Yeah, Buddhism is very
I like
good.
That thing where, that sort of philosophy where any moment is a moment for change. Like right now, I could be starting like a whole new, I've just thought of something and I've just started my life on an entirely different path. I haven't, like, you know, but for all you know, I did, like, you know.
Yeah, but there's, couldn't any moment, couldn't you be a Catholic and have every moment be a moment for change?
Yeah, but, no, you could. You have the ability to do that, but the Catholics don't tell you that. it's not put forward.
They do keep the reins a bit tight, right? We'll grant you that. That was changing. Wow! I just feel like, you know, if you have some kind of spiritual lack in your life, you can't outsource that to a different book and hope that will work.
But, exactly.
A set of rules is not what you're looking for there. Like, the fact that you're looking for a set of rules means you're completely wrong about what you need.
Yeah, in my opinion, I would agree with that. Do you want to hear Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall talking to each other?
Do I?
So this is that weird conversation they have about horses. So
running around on them. Anyway, go on.
I can't remember what was coming up from the rear or something. There's a lot of that kind of chat going on, but I've got the other clip as well. All right, we'll go with this one first.
Speaking of horses, I like to play them myself, but I like to see them work out a little first. See if they're front runners or come from behind. Find out what their whole card is. What makes them run.
Find out mine?
I think so.
Go ahead.
I'd say you don't like to be rated. You like to get out in front. Open up a lead, take a little breather in the back stretch, and then come home free.
You don't like to be raided yourself.
I haven't met anyone yet that could do it. Any suggestions?
Well, I can't tell till I've seen you over a distance of ground. You've got a touch of class, but I don't know how far you can go.
A lot depends on who's in the saddle. Go ahead, Marlo. I like the way you work. In case you don't know it, you're doing all right.
There's one thing I can't figure out.
What makes me run?
Uh-huh.
I'll give you a little hint. Sugar won't work. It's been tried.
What'd you try it on me for? Who told you to sugar me off this case? Was it Eddie Mars?
She thought she had him. She thought she had him on the go, but he was too wise for it then.
Do you know what I noticed that in the film that I don't think is the case in the books, the Philip Marlowe books? All women find him irresistible. I don't think that's necessarily the case in the books. I know he has flings in the books, but yeah. It's not like every woman that walks past him. Because he's in a scruffy old private eye. He probably smells.
Yeah.
You know, like, he's probably drunk a lot of the time. Like,
well, he's an interesting figure. He's not...
I mean, having spoken of Sinatra and saying he was like John Wayne and that, there, it's not a super macho type, is it?
No.
The noir kind of detective. It's a bit...
It's more about brains.
Droopy. Yeah.
But it's like they have to think about shit and figure it out. Like, it's not necessarily running about punching lads left and right, like, you know.
Yeah, he does get the shit kicked out of him a couple of times.
Yeah. Yes.
But it's interesting. That is interesting. So it's like there was this, like, other rail running along beside the cowboy. Also, he has to deal with tougher women. The Hawksian woman.
Yeah. Is that a Hawks thing?
Well,
what else did Howard Hawks make?
His Girl Friday.
Oh, was that Howard Hawks?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a great film.
The Maltese Falcon. Yeah, he made a lot of these. He does. There is definitely a type there. Yeah, a lot of women. A lot of don't fuck with me women kind of in his films.
Yeah.
Which is weird. I suppose it was around the time of the war. A lot of women in factories and stuff. A lot of very competent women out in the world. And then they all had to go back and start making the beds again.
Okay, so this would have been... Yeah, I suppose it would have been during the war they were making that. These Marlowe films, wouldn't it? No.
No, it would have just been... after, maybe. You see, a lot of German expressionists would have ended up in America just before and during the war. And they were really into sort of... expressionism and sort of...
forever expressing themselves.
Oh, would you quit... Shut the fuck up expressing yourself, the people were saying. But they would have been into sort of light playing tricks with light. And then when they came over, they really, really influenced noir. And that would have been during that, around that time. All the kind of shadows and all the kind of...
that makes sense.
You know, playing with light and dark. That would have all come from those guys who came out of the war. But he's an interesting guy. He isn't super macho. Is that two different things? Would you call the cowboy Stew? You say that the noir detective is more about brains, but would you call Clint Eastwood stupid? Well, no, Clint Eastwood's a different era.
John Wayne stupid. Never said anything. Like, it's hard to know.
John Wayne said things. I wasn't a great Wayne.
I don't know. See, I don't know the Wayne Westerns very well. I've no real time for them, to be honest. Like, you know, I
probably don't myself, is the honest culture. I love The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance.
I don't think I've ever seen it.
It's almost... It's not really a Wayne Western. It's like a... It's really good. Jimmy Stewart's on it.
But, oh, I like Jimmy Stewart.
Oh, I like him too. But The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance is...
What's the fucking rabbit with James Stewart in it?
Yeah, Harvey.
Harvey, that's a great movie.
Yeah, it is a good film, yeah. That's weird, yeah. What put that in your head? Oh, Jimmy
Stewart.
I was
just trying to think of James Stewart films, yeah.
Yeah, Harvey is a good film, yeah. But it's like The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance has a John Wayne Western in the background, and it kind of is made to look sort of impractical to what's going on in the front end. It's a really good film. But there's kind of a tragic thing to John Wayne. It obviously kind of likes that kind of stuff, but also it's kind of sort of grown up a little bit. It might be the first kind of revisionist Western where it's like looking at that stuff and saying you can't run a society on the basis of man's got to do. Like, you know, it's...
So what is... There's revisionist and deconstructionist. Do you have to revise something before you can deconstruct it, or what way does that work?
I'd say it's pick your poison, then, to be honest. I don't know. Is it deconstructionist? Yeah, this... Well, I tell you what, this wasn't deconstructionist. This was absolutely... This was the original construction.
Yeah, yeah. This was a private eye story. But, I mean...
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, if I picked another fucking swap, I don't have enough to say about. Maybe I haven't written it for long enough. But I really enjoyed listening to the audiobook, the Long Goodbye audiobook, and I kind of wanted to watch it again. So here we are now, living the results of my decision.
I'm going to do something unfair to you now, Dan.
Go for it.
I'm going to ask you, and spoilers, Frank, I'm going to ask you to give me a blow-by-blow of the plot.
Why on earth would you do that? Of all the people to ask...
Just because I'm not 110% sure.
Okay. But every scene had two new names in it, like.
Yeah.
And you're like, wait, what? Eddie Mars.
I remember him talking about Panacci, and Panacci got out the door, and I was like, wait, who's Panacci? And it turned like, oh, it's that guy.
It's just the guy.
I think that's the first time I've heard his name, though.
Yeah.
This one, you were telling me about what he did, what I saw him do in the last
scene. What was the Irish name?
Regan.
Regan.
He never shows
Sean
up.
Sean Regan.
Whatever happened to that guy? How did that... What was it with that guy?
Well, this is the... He was the...
He was dead. No, he was dead. Oh, I'm a dickhead. Yeah, spoilers, Mike. Sorry.
Well, this is all spoilers. But also, it's going to make no fucking sense anyway. Yeah, so it doesn't matter. We're spoiling something we don't understand.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's like... So he's the dad, who you only see once, who sets this whole thing in motion.
Is being in the clip there.
Blackmailed.
Yeah.
By... Who's blackmailing him? There was a guy called Brody who tried to blackmail him originally.
But it was not the same guy who was blackmailing him this time.
I don't think so.
The bookshop guy was blackmailing him, but Brody
Geiger.
Geiger.
Yeah.
But he was just a go-between for Geiger, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Compromising photos. Well, see, Geiger.
Well, this is in
how old was that daughter supposed to be?
Like a teenager, I think. See, the Geiger in the book is the bookshop is a cover for like a smut shop. He's selling porn, essentially. So the picture is in the book is a salacious picture.
I did like...
Whereas in this one, she's fully clothed, but she's just high, you know?
Yeah, I did like when Humphrey Bogart was going into the bookshop to investigate, and he turned the front of his hat up and put on glasses. And wow.
Like, he's no Jerry Lewis, is he?
But he looked like Jerry Lewis. Do you know who I thought he looked like? Professor Frink.
He did a bit, yeah. But he didn't change that much, really. He just went...
He just looked like a guy who would be collecting rare books. Oh, excuse me.
And so...
Oh, sold a book.
So, bro... Like, and then... But the daughter, the older daughter, is in on the blackmail somehow. Because...
Is she in on the blackmail? I don't think she is.
Because your man Sean Regan is supposed to have gone on off with Eddie Mars' wife. That's where he went.
But that was just a cover-up, wasn't it? Yeah, because I think the younger daughter killed him, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
Didn't she? So the younger daughter killed Regan, and Mars, for money, put about the story that Regan ran away with his wife and sent his wife off to a cabin.
Oh, so that's why she was in the cabin. She was hiding out so he could get money for this story.
Yeah.
See, there's a lot of I think a lot of this was pretty obscured in the film because he had to cut some shit out. And also, you know the guy who's Geiger's driver who goes to... Who shoots... Is it Eddie Morris that he shoots in the apartment? You know the way that everyone ends up in this apartment and...
It's not Eddie Morris he shoots, it's Brody.
That's Brody.
Because Eddie Mars is the guy Bogey shoots at the end, or Bogey sends out the door to be shot at the end.
Oh, yeah, so and he goes out and gets shot, yeah, because that's not in the book. The book is a different ending, apparently.
It was a little bit implausible.
Yeah, but it's because the code wouldn't allow the ending. The ending that they originally had, they couldn't use.
What was the ending?
I can't remember. I don't know. But it was, the code wouldn't let them do it. So I think the board of the code came up with the ending for the film. So, what was I going to say? Fuck, what was I even talking about?
I can't remember. We were trying to do the plot.
The guy who shoots Brody, who and then Bogey chases him down the street back into that guy in the book.
Young Italian looking fella.
Yeah. But in the book, he is Geiger's lover. He's his chauffeur, but they're also having a homosexual relationship.
Oh, you couldn't put that in the film.
So that's not in the film, but that's your man's fucking motivation for getting involved in the first place, like, you know.
Oh yeah, because actually now that I'm thinking about it, that's never explained why he does that.
Yeah, so those two are a couple. Wait, and
that still doesn't exist. Did your man kill Geiger? Brody killed Geiger.
I don't know. No idea.
Because Geiger's dead when we first meet him. Like.
Yeah, yeah. But the thing is as well that
why would Brody kill Geiger if he was his bread and butter?
I don't see. This is the thing. Chandler himself didn't know, because when they were writing the script, you know the way they drenched the car out of the river.
Yeah.
And there's the chauffeur's dead in the car.
Yeah.
So when they were writing the script for the film, they called Chandler and said, "Who killed the chauffeur?"
Right.
And he was like, you know, he was like, "It's in the book. Go back and read the fucking book and leave me alone." And then apparently Chandler went back over the book and got back in touch with them and said, "You know what? It's not in the book. I don't know who killed the chauffeur." Because he was a pisshead. Like, he was drunk the whole time he was writing that book.
Well, he was one of those, he was a jobbing writer, like, isn't he? He was like Joe Cotton in The Third Man. This was not a guy writing the next great American novel. This was a guy
getting the thing finished, like,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So, I think what happens sometimes in these things, and I actually kind of prefer that. Like, I kind of prefer something being a bit scrappy like that, but it is a thing where it is, like, it's not too neatly tied up, but apparently he didn't really give a shit about neatly tying everything up either. Like,
well, that's alright. I mean, you can too neatly tie a thing up.
Yeah, sometimes that's annoying.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't think of any examples off the top of my head, like, you know, but...
Oh, I'm sure there are some.
Yeah, I'm
but
sure.
But here we are.
But I think, sometimes I think things that are like big budget films at the minute that are written and written and written within an inch of their lives, yeah. Like, and there's like 8 writers on a script or something like that, and probably 10 more we've never heard of who don't get credited, like, and you just think...
Doing punch-ups.
Yeah, exactly. And at some point you're just like, that was a fucking waste of my time. Like, you know, like, why? Like, I'd much rather see something that came from...
Don't go wasting my time.
I'd much rather see something that just came from someone's imagination, and it might not be perfect, but it's their story, like, you know. And
yeah, but there's a balance, isn't there?
Of course, yeah, it can't just be, like, completely incomprehensible.
Sure, you know? Sometimes, like, you know, one more draft could have made something of this if you weren't such lazy bastards. Like.
Yeah, but, like, maybe I want to hear from a lazy bastard sometimes. Does everything have to be bashed to death, like, fucking, like, a samurai sword, like, you know? The metal just pressed and pressed and pressed. We're not trying to kill anybody with these things. We're just trying to fucking enjoy ourselves for a couple hours.
Poor old samurais. If it wasn't for Tom Cruise, we'd be forgotten completely.
So dedicated as he is to keeping the art of the samurai alive.
That was a weird film.
I've never seen it. I've fucking no patience for that.
Billy Connolly's in it.
I know, yeah. But I only know about that because he was talking about it on Parkinson.
Oh, what did he say?
I can't remember, but it was funny. Like,
he's playing an Irishman.
In The Last Samurai.
Yeah, and he can't do an Irish accent. Of all the people you would think would be able to do an Irish accent, Billy Connolly can't do an Irish accent.
It doesn't really surprise me. All he can really do is Scottish.
Yeah, but then why didn't those guys go, like, after the first line read, go, oh, okay, let's just make this guy Scottish then. This character is now Scottish.
Because I don't think
you just had Billy Connolly talking like that.
They don't know what an Irish accent is in Hollywood, though. Because by the time someone like Liam Neeson goes over there and gets big, his accent's fucking gone anyway, like, you know.
Liam Neeson has a very distinctive voice. Very distinctive. And a very particular set of skills.
You ever seen Dylan Moran? There's a really funny bit on Dylan Moran's last DVD about Liam Neeson films.
No.
I can't even remember what it is. It really made me laugh. Can't remember.
I hope he wasn't going too hard on him. Liam Neeson.
No, he was a fan. He was saying he likes all those films.
Which films now?
Like Taken and all that.
Okay. You see, I kind of feel like...
Those kind of films where Liam Neeson plays a very old hero.
I just feel like guys like Neeson and Denzel Washington and guys like that, they've done their time, they've paid their dues. Let them just cash a few checks now at the end of their career and fucking buy their grandkids a pony.
They are both names that would not entice me to watch something. Denzel Washington and Liam Neeson. I wouldn't go, oh, I'll have to watch that because Denzel Washington and Liam Neeson are in it.
But
that's bound to be good.
But they're in great. I just mean they were actors who, up until 10 years ago, maybe it's more now, but certainly up until 15 years ago, you wouldn't have immediately associated with switch your brain off action bullshit. And then they just like turned 50 and went, yeah, fuck this noise. I'm driving a car off a bridge or whatever they did. I don't know what the thinking was. I'm like, yeah, I'm all right. Up until 50, you did all the stuff and now you're killing Muslims or whatever the fuck you do, Liam.
I haven't seen any of those films. I don't really feel equipped to fucking comment on them, to be honest. Like, you know.
I saw the first Taken.
That was when he was... What's the next one? Tuck.
too much imagination.
Give it back.
Too much imagination there, Dan. Taken 2.
Returned.
It was just... I saw the first one. And you know what? Fine.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, films like that are designed to switch on halfway through and watch because there's nothing else on telly.
Yeah,
but because I don't watch things like that anymore, I'm not gonna go, all right, I need to get the stream and watch Taken from the beginning so I know what's, you know, I'll never
you
do
don't
that.
Need to do that. They're designed for like fucking the night after Stevens's night or whatever. It's just that's what they're for. Let them be that.
Do you know what? That is something I'd love to do, is make the perfect night after Stevens' night film. Like, make a really good one.
Like what?
I don't know. It's just a bit... Just when you said it there, I'm like, that is a tone. The night after Stevens' night, the kind of film you watch, there's definitely a tone to it.
You've just enjoyed turkey sandwiches, but you already know, oh, I'm tired of the turkey now.
Yeah.
And you're sitting there, and you probably have worked the next day... Or maybe yeah. the day after, and it's been a couple of days,
and you're just like, how am I going to sleep?
Are you just left like, in the quality street? Who's putting the wrappers back in the box?
Yeah, yeah.
And there was something perfect on the telly behind you. While
something that you just like glance at every now and again, and be like, I thought he was dead. No, that was a flashback or whatever. No, flash forward, I suppose it would be.
A flashback to when he died. Oh, dear old. It could happen with this now. I couldn't 110% tell you who did what in this film.
In The Big Sleep?
Yeah.
No, well, apparently there is a scene that exists where they explain everything when Howard Hawks cut it out.
Just kill the momentum, I'd say.
Yeah, just at the end of the film. It's like, because there's... What way does it end again? There's like an exchange between... It's an exchange between Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall at the very end where he says something along the lines of... What's going to help you get through this or something like that, and she says, well, you ought to know, or something like that, you know, and then it's the end.
Yeah, it's in the house, isn't it? It's just after Mars gets killed.
Yeah, well, they're driving away, I think, aren't they? It's in the car.
Is it in the car?
I think it's in the car, yeah.
Fair play. There was a big age gap there.
Well, yeah, well, Humphrey Bogart was 104 years old or whatever he was, like, you know.
He was probably pushing around, he was probably hovering around 40. And I really think you're overestimating her age. I think she was like 21, 22 at the most.
She looks older.
I don't know that she does. I think she just had that way about her.
Maybe so. I know that, like, for all the sort of... Well, Humphrey Bogart was basically what masculinity was in 1946, like, wasn't he? Like,
well, there's a question. Actually, that's exactly like in what Hollywood.
I don't know that he was.
Well, I think that was like the new masculinity in Hollywood in 46, was that kind of, you know, it wasn't just that he was like fucking punching lads in the face the whole time. He was smart, like, you know. Mm. And but I think in real life he was a bit of a nervous Nelly, like, you know, he wasn't smooth at all. Apparently, like,
well, he couldn't possibly. I'd say it would mean
like he couldn't walk through life like that. No,
you'd end up you'd catch your head.
You'd hit by a car. Someone happy you'd be fucking walking across the road, like, you know.
Yeah, but he's. I always picture kind of him and John Huston as guys that would be down the back. Like in a snug, fucking drinking whiskey and smoking cigars, and really the party would be going on outside that, and they're happy out.
Yeah, yeah.
I kind of think, which I suppose is kind of macho in its own way. Like,
I suppose maybe. It would be, yeah. But he
this
was,
isn't it? Yeah, go on.
Oh no, I was just gonna say. I think at the time he was something different. Like, you know, he wasn't like fucking Errol Flynn or whatever, swinging from lampshades and all that kind of stuff.
No, he definitely wasn't. He definitely wasn't. But Errol Flynn was a cunt.
Oh yeah, he was a degenerate, like.
Yeah, it was a real nasty piece of work.
Yeah, yeah.
Real nasty piece of work.
They talk about people not being able to watch you know, like Woody Allen films or fucking your man Kevin Spacey or whatever, but Errol Flynn was worse than the two of them put together. Like, you know,
it's nothing is certain, but it is not a crazily unfounded conspiracy theory. It is at least worth consideration that there is enough circumstantial evidence to make it an interesting question. That Errol Flynn collaborated with the fucking Nazis, like...
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah. Got away from raping teenage girls and then decided to collaborate with some Nazis.
Yeah, apparently he was just, like, just the worst.
Yes. The man was a bit much.
Yeah.
He's a bit much now.
Not a gentleman.
No, not a gentleman at all. A bit much. How do you find... What do you think of Errol? Errol is a bit much. That'd be how
the kind of person that you'd say, I'd watch that lad.
But not in a film.
Yeah, if you're not watching Kevin Spacey's films, you should be fucking burning Robin Hood or whatever the fuck he was in.
Yeah, fucking have you ever seen that? Sailor or whatever.
Have you ever seen that Robin Hood?
I mean, I'm sure I have.
People say it's a classic. I don't think I've ever seen it.
I'm sure it's fucking... I'm sure it's like all these classics, it's grand. You know, fucking probably makes very little sense now, like this fucking thing.
Yeah, but this was... Do you know what I was thinking when I was watching this? I was thinking Howard Hawks was kind of like the Clint Eastwood of the 40s.
In what sense?
He's just a kind of a no-nonsense guy. Just kind of a make the shot, set it up, cut, done, let's go to lunch.
Yeah, there's not... I suppose that did he come from the theater or anything? It would make kind of sense if he did.
No, he was like a mechanic or something. There's
fuck all cuts and stuff in his films, like, you know.
Yeah, no, he's super laid back. Orson Welles said of him, he was talking about John Ford, but he said Hawks is excellent prose, but John Ford is poetry.
Yeah, but poetry's fucking boring a lot of times.
Nah, there's your fucking. And do you know something else about poetry, written by poets, Dan? Reason enough to be suspicious, I would say.
What we need is some poetry written by mechanics.
Hawks was a mechanic or something like that. He was like a race car mechanic or something. Like, yeah, but he got into Hollywood now in the era before it was, like when it was starting. He did silent films and stuff as well.
But sure, like the director wasn't considered an artist back then. I was reading a thing about half those. There was one of those Elvis films. You know the terrible Elvis films, like Clambake, whatever. Apparently one of them was directed by a guy who was blind.
Clambake, like, Hotel.
The director was like...
Since my baby left me, I found a new place to dwell. It's down on the edge of homeless fields. Clambake, Hotel.
I wonder, did he do... Like, this is the thing. Elvis made more fucking films than anybody. Elvis is in fucking 20-odd films, and he made them all in the space of a few years, like...
Yeah, well, you're not going to be good-looking forever, Dan.
I suppose not, but some of them have to be good. Fucking Jailhouse Rock is actually a good film.
I've never seen it.
It might be worth a swap, actually, but it might not be good.
When you were a kid, when you were at school, did you have that dirty version of Jailhouse Rock?
What do you mean?
We used to sing... Went to a party at the county jail. Ripped my balls on a rusty nail. When I got home, I got quite a shock. Only one ball and a half a cock, or less rock.
I feel like as a kid, I knew there was a lot of dirty songs going around that I didn't quite understand. Like, do you remember, was it Bang Bang Rosie? Was that one?
No, I don't remember that.
I wish I could remember the fucking words to these things, but I can't. Like, you know, they were one of these things that the word coming up, like, there was like, what the fuck was, why am I even trying to remember the lyrics to fucking, I couldn't follow a film I saw this morning. How am I going to remember fucking Bang Bang Rosie?
It was an interesting film, it was a good film, it was enjoyable to watch, but prose rather than poetry, Orson Welles would say.
Yeah,
Orson Welles has his tea. Orson Welles was a gobshit too, like.
But how many good films did Orson Welles make?
Two. People say The Magnificent Ambersons is great, but I've never seen it.
I've only seen the Third Man is him, right? Is that?
Well, no, it's he's in it.
Oh, he didn't direct that.
No, he didn't direct.
I mean, I've seen fucking the one with the sled. What's it called?
Citizen Kane.
I mean,
it's good.
It's grand. It's not any better than this. Like, you know,
I can follow it.
suppose, yeah.
He's trying for something big. I don't know, maybe Hughes was as well, but...
Whistle me a tune. Don't try for anything big.
I know what he's saying, right? I know what he would have been saying about the poetry, because there is a kind of a mythic sense to Ford's stuff. I'm not a fan of Ford, though.
Yeah, those films are fucking boring.
Some of them are boring.
Yeah. The wide open... I get it. Like, I see the wide open planes in one shot. Like, you know, I don't need to look at them for fucking half an hour.
I have to say, I like Howard Hawks' stuff better.
Yeah.
The wide open plane is just a tight little alley that you can hardly see what's happening in.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, I enjoy it. Plus, you know, you want to watch poetry. I went to a writing thing one time. It was, like, getting published, and there was a bunch of publishers in a desk, and different aspiring authors could ask them questions. And this guy from the back stood up and asked them a question, and they answered him. And he argued with them and went on for about 5 to 10 minutes, which is a long time in a Q&A, and other people are waiting to ask questions of the professional people. He was a poet. He was a poet.
Why would you ask someone in the industry a question and then argue with the answer?
Yes, what would be the best way for me to get published? Well, you should send us your manuscript.
I shouldn't have to spend money on stamps!
It was just, it really was like that. And it was just like, oh, fuck.
Have you ever sat down and read a book of poetry?
No.
I can't imagine doing such a thing. I can imagine reading isolated poems by people.
I have read isolated poems by people.
Yeah.
But the internet's great for that. Like.
But I mean, to sit down and read a book of poetry just of an evening, like, what the...
I've never done it.
Like, you sort of skip ahead and go, see, it's really all about rain or whatever, like, you know.
You get some weird ones. You get some weird, weird, weird poetry. But it's because it's written by people like that man. Lunatics, in other words.
See, if you go to buy a book of poetry and you see all that fucking white space on the pages, you're like, what am I paying for here? Like, you know, it's just like, it's not like...
That's good paper, Dan.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know. Like, they could maybe do it in, like a newspaper. Mm. You know, like art, like newspaper columns, and maybe just only use up, like, 10 pages.
Yeah, well, is there a war on or something? Well, yeah, consistently for the past 70 years.
Yeah.
Listen, I don't know. I don't understand why you're arguing with people. You were the man who decided you want to be a poet. So surely, when you decided you want to be a poet, you had to make peace with the fact that you were...
Like, no one was ever
never going to read it. Yeah.
Why, like, if I was a poet, I think I'd fucking start a blog.
Yeah.
And blog a poem a week or a month or whatever. Yeah, like, maybe get some, you to sweat over the 10 lines.
Maybe get some fucking ad revenue or something. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, so why are you arguing with a publisher? Why you really think, oh no, I've not only am I a great poet, great enough to be worth anybody's time to read, I've also figured out a whole new paradigm of publishing that nobody else has figured out, and this is going to make poetry fucking commercially viable. Fuck off. I don't know that man. I never saw him before or since in my life. I didn't exchange 2 words with him. I know he's an asshole.
I know. Well, he's a poet. It's just like, there's ground zero for you.
Yeah, ground zero.
It's
baby.
Like, you know, I don't know, poetry. Get a job. Why have I been such a dick about poetry?
There's some nice poetry out there.
Yeah, but I feel like it doesn't take as much work as writing like a novel.
Oh, I don't know.
I do. I just, like, it's a few lines.
Writing a novel is... It's an effort of shitehawks, Danny.
It's a what?
It's the shitehawks effort.
What do you mean, though?
Anybody
like, I understand it's not building a bridge or anything.
If,
like,
if you keep fucking plugging away at it, eventually you'll have a novel.
Well, no, of course, yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Like, you could write a poem in fucking half an hour.
Well, she wasn't too good looking, but I didn't really care. Her single strongest feature was she happened to be there.
What's that?
And that was my poem. I was trying
you're
for poetry.
Up?
Yeah, I've lost it now.
Oh, sorry. I interrupted the flow.
Sorry. I'm happy with that.
I killed the poem.
I'm happy with that. That's 4 lines. I'll do another 4 tomorrow night, and then we'll see what happens Tuesday.
Will I go for one more clip of the...
yeah, what time are we on?
Sleep? We're at 1 hour and 10 minutes.
Oh, shit! Really? We've said fuck all about fuck all.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
All right.
So here we go. This is the last clip where he essentially bangs a woman in a bookshop. Here we go.
He does, yeah.
Well, Geiger's in his early 40s, medium height, fattish, soft all over, Charlie Chan mustache, well-dressed, wears a black hat, affects a knowledge of antiques and hasn't any, and, oh yes, I think his left eye is glass.
You'd make a good cop.
Thanks. Going to wait for him to come out?
Yeah.
It'll close for another hour or so. It's raining pretty hard.
I got my car. Yeah, that's right, it is, isn't it? You know, it just happens. I got a bottle of pretty good rye in my pocket. I'd a lot rather get wet in here.
Well. Looks like we're closed for the rest of the afternoon. Tell me more about this business.
Oh, there isn't much to tell.
What's the matter?
I'm just wondering if you have to,
Oh, not necessarily.
Little things like that make enough. Hello.
Hello.
I wonder, is that the first example in a film of, you know, that trick that they did in a lot of 90s films where the girl was a nerd through the whole film, and then by the end of the film she just takes off her glasses and lets her hair down?
And it's like,
and she's ooh, like that. I wonder, is that like the first time that ever happened in a film?
I don't know.
It's pretty creepy, Mick. It just seems, and the way he says it as well, is like, do you need to wear nails? Any chance you can take them off? It's like, what fucking difference does it make to you?
Do you remember Arrested Development?
No.
Alright, fair enough.
Go on, what was the scene?
Job was banging Kitty for information. And he made her take the glasses off, and it turns out she was cross-eyed, which she had no glasses.
I don't remember that.
So he made her take her hair down, and she just had like a fright wig. It was funny.
See, your man Jeffrey Tambor is now one of these guys that's been...
He's under
the microscope.
I heard that a while.
Jason, but there was an interview the other day, and Jason Bateman kind of stood up for him. Apparently, he gave what's that older actress that's on Arrested Development who plays the mother?
Oh, the mother, yeah, okay.
Well, apparently, he gave her fucking Jeffrey Tambor gave her real abuse on set about something one day, and Jason Bateman was doing that thing that fucking actors do. He's like, "Oh, that's just the process." And apparently it was just like Julie Walters was like, no actor had it. Apparently it was a group interview that got really awkward. And I think her name's Julie Walters. She was saying, no, that is literally the most ignorant any actor has ever been to me in fucking 50 years or however long she's been doing this. And Jason Bateman was like, no, that's just his process. Like, and you're fucking
your process, yeah. Fuck you.
What an excuse. You're fucking just pretend.
It's depressing though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw a guy completely lose it one time on a stage over a hat.
What happened?
Hat wasn't where it was supposed to be on the stage or something. So, you know, correcting 5 degrees in your trajectory when you walk across the stage is apparently enough to completely bring him out of character.
Did he lose his shit?
Yeah, he lost his shit backstage.
Was it during a tech rehearsal?
No, it was during an actual...
Oh, it was an actual performance. I saw a drummer lose his shit during... When we... Earlier on, when I was saying that we did The Wall. We were at... It was an amateur production of The Wall with a choir. Which was not... Probably not the best idea because a lot of that stuff isn't that easy.
Is that its own ours? Oh, okay.
Well, I mean, yeah, it is a bit. Like, yeah. It is. Like, you okay, know, there's no two ways about it. But there's...
Sorry.
The choir...
Sorry.
The choir... But see, the shit... What the guy who directed it, for whatever reason, I don't know how it was, but he had money at his disposal, and it was put on in Leisureland in Galway. Okay. Which is a place where fucking, like, Morrissey had played there the previous summer, like, you know.
Wow.
So, but there was a rush production, and the choir just kind of weren't up to it, really. Like, you know,
okay,
we were up to it as a band because there was only five of us. There was no, you know, we only had to fucking gel with each other, like, you know, where you put a choir, and all of a sudden now we're down in a pit, there's a choir up on the stage that is singing along with what we're doing, and it, like, some of it was alright, some of it was all over the place, like,
okay. Really.
And there's a bit at the end of one of the songs on the wall where it's got a weird bass drum pattern that the singer has to sing along with, and it was the, I think it was the dress rehearsal, which was the dress, it was supposed to, the tech rehearsal was supposed to be the day before, and the tech rehearsal spilled into the next day, which was supposed to be the dress rehearsal. So we did this rushed fucking dress rehearsal. I've been
there before.
Oh, it's a nightmare. Like, yeah. But it was at the end of this dress tech rehearsal that we're doing this song, and there's one guy from the choir singing along with this bass drum, and it's this weird bass drum where it's like, why can't I fight down, bum bum, why can't I turn and run, or something like that, and he fucked it up, and he'd been fucking it up since we started rehearsing, and he fucked it up in the dress rehearsal, and there was all this scaffolding at the side of the auditorium for some reason, and Steve, our drummer, fucked his sticks across the thing and leapt into the scaffolding and climbed up it like a monkey screaming.
Like King Kong.
He just went, for fuck's sake! And it was just, he lost it, like, you know.
Did that help the situation?
No, this guy, I felt bad. This guy, actually, now that I think about it, I think that guy had been the original guitar player.
Oh.
And wasn't able to do it. Oh. And now was this singing this song and wasn't able to do that either. Because it was a weird time thing. It wasn't really his fault. It was difficult. They were expecting too much off non-professional singers.
Mm.
Like, we were playing in pubs every week, and we were playing a certain amount of Pink Floyd music and stuff like it with weird time changes and stuff in it. So we could do it.
Yeah.
But people who like The Wall and think they could just sort of, oh, I can do that, I'll be in the choir and just sort of sing along with it. It's not, it's more than, you have to do more than that, you know? So there was a lot of stuff that was, even on the night, there was a lot of stuff that was really out of time and messy, like, you know, and...
Oh, look. Such is life.
I felt bad for the guy because he was really doing his best and he just could not get this, why can't I turn and run? And Steve just fucking lost his mind.
I've been in that situation too many times where I'm just not getting it.
It's embarrassing. And everybody
else is getting it. And I'm just not getting it. And I'm just like, oh, God. Oh, let me just curl up here until everybody goes home.
But it's a really exposed, like, vulnerable place to be. Like, you know.
It is.
You're just like, all right, I'm holding this thing back now.
Yeah. God of carnage.
Did you feel like that on that play?
It's not just that I felt like it. I fucking was it.
Really?
I was living the dream, Dan. Living the nightmare.
But everyone said it went really well.
Oh, it went all right. Yeah, it was fine. It was good. It was grand.
But I only have a certain amount of experience with the theatre. And like that was one. And I felt bad for that guy. But at the same time, the director was expecting an insane amount of precision off this
amateur
choir.
Mm.
And it just didn't, it really didn't work. You know, like.
Oh, look, it happens. What do you do, Dan?
Well, what we do now, Niall, is we bounce on and we talk about the next swap.
Yeah.
Because you, speaking of The Wall, to bring it back home.
Oh, you're bringing it all back home, baby.
Bringing it all back home. You got me to watch Angel Heart.
Mm.
Another Private Eye thing with maybe a bit more of a supernatural voodoo.
Yeah, a bit of a horror element happening there. Yeah.
Some of it was fucking terrifying.
Yeah, what did you make of it?
Oh, I'd seen it before. I love this film.
Yeah, I do love it too. Isn't it a super good film?
Yeah, it's brilliant, yeah.
Yeah, it's a weird one, though.
It's,
it was a real flop when it came out.
That doesn't surprise me.
Why?
It's fucking Robert De Niro with long hair. Like, who's going to want to see that?
He's very good in it, I thought.
He's brilliant in it, yeah. But when you see if you see a still of him with the long hair and the big nails, you just go, that looks fucking stupid. Whatever that is, like, you know.
Let me play Robert De Niro for the good people at home.
So, do you want to set it up?
Harry Angel is a private detective in New York City, played by, what's his name?
Mickey Rourke.
Mickey Rourke. He gets a call from, what is it, Mr. Weintraub, an attorney, to come and meet his client, Mr. Seifer. He has a job for him. This is Harry Angel, Mickey Rourke, meeting Mr. Seifer, Louis Seifer, played by Robert De Niro.
Apparently, a performance modelled on Martin Scorsese.
I've heard that. How true can that be?
Maybe it's just like the sort of that kind of calmness he has. I don't know.
Have a listen and see what you think.
Mr. Angel, allow me to introduce my client, Monsieur Louis Safer.
Hiya, Harry Angel.
Pleased to meet you, Mr. Angel.
So, how did you hear about me? I guess you guys just looked in the phone book, huh? Usually that's what happens, because my name is Angel, it's under A's, people, you know, people are lazy, they flick through, they see the first name in a book, and,
Johnny Favorite.
Excuse me?
Do you by chance remember the name Johnny Favorite?
Remember the name Johnny? No, I don't think so.
You never knew him?
Am I supposed to know him?
He was a crooner before the war, quite famous in his way.
Well, I'll tell you, Mr. Safier, you know, I...
Mr. Cipher.
I'm sorry, babe. I'm sorry, Mr. Ciphers. I usually don't get involved in anything really heavy. I usually handle small-time stuff, insurance jobs, divorces, things of that nature. I get lucky sometimes I handle people. But I don't know no, you know, Carooners or anybody famous, you know?
His real name was Liebling.
I don't know any Liebling either. So what is it that you guys want from me? Does this man owe you money or something?
Not quite. I gave Johnny some help at the beginning of his career.
So were you his, like, his agent?
No. Oh, nothing so.
Monsieur Cipher has a contract. Certain collateral was involved to be forfeited in the event of his death.
Losing me a little bit. We're talking about a guy who's dead.
So, Mickey Rourke, back when he didn't look a bit strange.
Like a cartoon character.
Yeah. Still, Mickey, but still doing good stuff. Like, you know, The Wrestler was really good.
The Wrestler was really good, yeah. We should do The Wrestler somewhere.
Yeah.
But this is who I think of when I think of Mickey Rourke. There's a whole generation for whom that will not be true.
Yeah, yeah, he's the weird-looking dude.
He's a weird dude, yeah.
The first thing I think I saw him in was... have you ever seen Spun? Or Spin? Or whatever it was called? Mina Savari's in it. Like, Mickey Rourke is a meth dealer.
No.
He's the cook. And it's like pre-Breaking Bad kind of meth thing. And that's the first... Like, I was just like, who is this fucking weird-looking guy?
What ever happened to Mira Sorvino?
Mira Sorvino?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, who did you say?
I was talking about Mina Savari.
Oh, okay.
You know, she was in... I don't think she's been in anything lately, but
yeah,
she was in
a lot of those 90s teen comedies.
Yeah, right? Exactly, yeah. 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 And she was in 6 Feet Under for a season.
I believe Empire once described her as looking like she could suck a golf ball through a garden hose.
Well, isn't that just a lovely thing to write about someone?
Isn't it, though? But that was the 90s, very laddish time now.
That was in fucking Empire.
Yeah.
I mean, you say laddish.
Well, it's like, I don't read Loaded, or I didn't ever read Loaded.
No,
me neither. I bought one Loaded my entire life. It was for a calendar.
Yeah, I'm sure I've done that as well.
That was my computer, and I apologize.
Dying.
No, it's not dying. Is it dying?
But what's the... Oh, your trial has expired.
Trial expired several months ago, and that's still coming up. So, what do you make of that, Angel Heart? What do you make of... How did you feel about Robert De Niro chatting away to Mickey Rourke?
I loved it. I think it's a great film. And I was saying to you while the clip was playing, when you know the end of the film, which is... Spoilers, Frank. Basically, the killer... the guy that he's looking for is him.
Yeah.
So, at Johnny Favorite sold his soul to the devil for success...
Mm-hmm.
And then found some kind of loophole to get away from the devil by escaping into the body of Harry Angel.
Yes.
In Times Square in New Year's Eve when they all got back from the war. Oh no, they were heading to war.
Yeah.
And so basically he sliced him open and took out his heart or whatever. Like, and
he ate his heart.
Yeah.
It was still beating.
Oh, that guy near the end, yeah.
Yeah.
And so, basically, Harry Angel's fucking private eye is hired to find himself.
Yes.
In a weird way.
By the devil.
By the devil, who's looking for him?
Because Monsieur Louis Cypher turns out to be Lucifer.
It's like, even your name is a dime store joke.
It's the first time you watched this, did you see that?
No, not at all, no. But I don't see anything.
Neither did I, now, I have to say. But yet, when you watch it again, it's like there's a scene with the egg, where, you know, the egg, some cultures believe the egg is the symbol of the soul. Then he just devours this egg in front of him. Like,
and just puts salt on it and...
It's so threatening. You're like, how did I not see that this guy was basically, I'm going to eat your soul, Mr. Angel.
But he was just like, yeah, it's a weird, it'd be a weird exchange to have with someone who's just munching on a hard-boiled egg, like, aggressively. You
it's
know?
Very...
But when you know the ending, it's a very different film. Like, it's like getting, it is like two different films, like, you know, because the first time you're like going, where the fuck is this even going? Like, and there's all sorts of voodoo and shit, like, you know.
You're like a guy who's been hired to investigate, and hired by a lunatic to investigate religious crazies. And then the second time you watch it, you're like, oh no. A guy who's been hired by the second most ultimate power in the universe to look into dark magical forces. And it's just, you don't, for me, I didn't see it coming. I thought it was wonderful. And it's one of my all-time favorite
films. It's a great movie, yeah. De Niro's great. And like at the start of it, it says special appearance by Robert De Niro. And I'm just thinking, it's not a special appearance. He's a fucking character. Why is it down as special appearance?
He's probably not in 10 minutes of the film, though.
I would have thought he is.
Well, maybe. He's definitely not in 15. There's no question he's not in 15.
But he's probably in the film as much as Lisa Bonet is. Lisa Bonet.
Oh, maybe. She's beautiful, isn't she?
She's 19 in this film.
Doesn't matter. She's beautiful.
This is what got her in trouble with Bill.
Yeah.
Bill was like, none of that in my show.
Bill gave her his permission.
Really?
Yeah, she went to Bill and she asked him for permission. It's a weird thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
He's a strange man, Bill Cosby.
Yeah. That goes without saying, yeah. Not your run-of-the-mill chap, Bill Cosby.
So he disapproved anyway.
She got fired from the show.
Why would she be fired for
being married to Lenny Kravitz?
Really,
it doesn't make sense.
Not married to Lenny Kravitz, for getting pregnant by Lenny Kravitz.
But I mean, you could stand beside Lenny Kravitz and get pregnant. That's not her fault.
Yeah, like, Lenny Kravitz has in the past gotten me pregnant. I getcha. That's just Lenny Kravitz. Like, but
it ain't over till it's over. I felt a kick.
My rhymes are so potent that in this small segment I got all of the ladies in the first two rows pregnant. That's not Lenny Kravitz, that's the Flight of the Conchords. But
I love that song. I'm only the hugest Lenny Kravitz fan, but that song ain't over till it's over.
Lenny Kravitz is cool.
It's got just like that violin line is cool, and I love the drum intro. Did you see a weird bass thing in the middle of it? It goes boom 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 boom.
I'm more interested in talking about Lisa Bonet.
Really? I'm more interested in talking about Lenny Kravitz, obviously.
Daddy, do you not fucking see her? Their daughter now is just her mother again. Like, she has a bit of a Lenny Kravitz jaw on her, but she's still, she's quality. But
she's beautiful. Lisa.
Yeah, she is. Is she in High Fidelity as well?
Spectacularly beautiful. Is she?
Is that not her in High Fidelity? She sleeps with John Cusack. She's the singer-songwriter.
Yeah, I think you might be right about that. I think that's her, yeah. I need to watch High Fidelity again.
Yeah, that's a little bit more accessible. She's a little bit older than that.
Swap it some way. Why? She's 19, like.
Yeah.
Okay. I really feel that's more creepy than illegal territory, though.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you're not doing anything. You're just saying it.
Technically, she's illegal in the States in this one. She's
17. Well, I mean, look.
She'd be legal here,
also,
but she'd be...
She's
why
not exactly
am I talking
backwards
about this? Why the fuck am I talking about this? Jesus Christ. That did occur to me when I was watching it, though. That'd be legal here. it's not right, is it?
There's that crazy sex scene in it with all the blood and everything. Blood coming in out of the ceiling. And
they had severe problems getting this down from an X rating to an R rating.
Yeah, I'm not fucking surprised.
Why?
Because, like, literally, like, she's underage.
Yeah.
In the film.
It's a very explicit sex scene.
It's not only is it's explicit, but it gets, like... it gets crazy at the end of it. It gets like frantic, blood
splashing
like,
over, and it's, he's trying to choke her, and like, she's screaming.
Yeah, like, and I guess they're trying to reflect the thing from earlier, the voodoo dance where they cut the chicken and everything, like, you know. But this blood, like, it's raining outside, and he's got leaks in the roof. But by the end of the sex scene, it's raining blood through the roof, and they're both splat. And it's just like,
and they're both buck arse naked, and the blood is just streaming over.
Yeah, them. Yeah. I'm not surprised they had a tough time getting an R rating. Like, what do you expect?
And by the time you get to the end of the film, you do realise, spoilers, Frank, that's his fucking daughter.
Yeah, yeah, that's his daughter.
It's a tough sell. It's a tough sell to the ratings board, I would imagine.
I mean, look, he doesn't know that at the time. And no. Technically, it's somebody else's body as well, like, you know. There's like, but you know what I mean? Like, the spirit of Johnny Favourite, whatever his name is.
Yeah.
Is hiding in this body. But the fucking, like, Harry Angel doesn't know that.
No.
He doesn't, it's not like inside Harry Angel's like, haha, I'm Johnny Favourite all along, and none of these fuckers know. He's not thinking that. He's just going about weird. Being
it does,
Harry.
It does kind of, are you entirely clear on what a soul is then in this? It's like, what was the point of Johnny Favourite? If Johnny Favourite has offered up another soul in Lou, but he has to live somebody else's life and not realise he's living somebody else's life. Like, yeah, what's
I was going to say what's in it for him, but it's dodging the devil is what's in it for him.
That's
like,
true.
You know?
Yeah, I suppose that's true, but yeah, it is an intense scene. It starts out very explicit and very sexy, but it gets very uncomfortable very quickly.
Yeah, it's hard to watch.
It is hard to watch. So yeah, having said that, right, and I don't want to be fucking making an excuse for sexualized violence, because this was in a kind of a weird roundabout way very sexualized violence, but I also think it was quite conscious sexualized violence, and it wasn't taking it lightly, and it wasn't being exploited if there was a reason for it there.
Can you imagine like the director directing that? Like, what is that like? And be like, all right, splash them with the blood, Mickey, choke her. Just, you know.
At least let's even get your tits just slightly around this way.
Can you, like, what's that? What's the set it, like when they're doing shit like that?
It is weird, because they fought hard to get Bob De Niro. They wanted Bob to hear De Niro for Harry Angel originally, and he just outright said no. And
can you blame him?
I think it's a brilliant film.
It is a brilliant film, and Mickey Rourke is brilliant in it as that character. But would you want to do it?
Why would you not want to do it?
Because, I don't know, it's a weird character to play. It's a character who's, like, unbeknownst to him at the time, has sex with his daughter. If I saw that in the script, I'd be like, yeah, I'm not doing this.
Okay, yeah, all right.
I'll watch this when it comes out, because it's a great story, but I'm not fucking doing this.
I have to say, I really liked it. It's one of my favorite fives. But he did say that when they finally got Robert De Niro, it took them a lot of effort and a lot of work to get Robert De Niro in what is basically a piece of stunt casting, like. But it took them a lot of time and a lot of effort to get Robert De Niro. And he said, Parker said, like, when De Niro came on, I just didn't direct him. I just let him do what he
apparently
wanted.
Apparently he was pretty scary on the set, because in preparation for the role, he actually went to hell for a few months.
He actually ruled over the torture of souls.
Yeah. Just to get a feel for it.
But yeah, it is weird. It's like, oh, I'd feel uncomfortable directing Robert De Niro. However, spritz some more blood on Lisa Bonet's tits, please, if you could. That
it's
is
a weird
interest.
When you think about it, yeah. Like Alan Parker. He's done that, The Wall, The Commitments, Angela's Ashes. He didn't fail, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, yeah.
What a weird fucking career.
But he's another kind of Hawks kind of guy. He tailors himself to the material.
This is what I was going
to
say.
It's
like,
not like Tarantino, where everything has to be bludgeon you with its Tarantino-ness.
Yeah, yeah.
This is not like Fame.
Like,
Angel
is there anything,
Heart is not like Fame.
Is there anything that marks Alan Parker's films as being Parkery?
They're just good.
But is there like a thing that you could...
I don't think so. But
isn't there a super uncomfortable sex thing in Fame as well? Isn't there a casting couch scene?
Honest to God, I remember Fame more from the TV show.
Me too. They actually played it on the radio this morning because it was some kind of anniversary of it. And I was saying to the lads, I was going, do you notice that woman wants to live forever and go to heaven? How does that work?
She wants her cake and eat it.
Very fucking theologically well, mixed
Johnny,
up.
Johnny Favourite wanted to live forever and still ended up going to hell.
But he didn't know. The poor cunt. No
he
idea.
He did his best, but he was outclassed. He was playing the devil. He was playing
the devil at his own game.
I couldn't get over how beautiful. I'm surprised now that your reaction to Lisa Bonet in this is she's 19.
Yeah, she is.
Yeah, I get that. But she is one of the most, if not the most stunningly beautiful women I've ever seen.
Yeah.
She's so beautiful, she actually makes me sad. Like, it makes me sad to look at her. She's so beautiful.
I know, I get what you're saying, Niall, but it does make me a little bit uncomfortable that she's a teenager in that film.
Yeah. He says. Yes, I can empathize with your feelings. Well, not
look,
really understanding
stick
them.
Stick on High Fidelity. And then I'm like, all right, here's Lisa Bonet
it
now in probably like 30
she's
or whatever at this point.
She's still spectacular. She's still spectacularly beautiful today.
Yeah, I'm sure she is. Yeah.
But in just something that just speaks of class, Dan, she looks her age at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen her recently, but in High Fidelity, she didn't look like someone that had a Reka.
I Googled her.
That's fair enough. I'm more comfortable with that than the...
She looks her age. She's somebody who has let herself look her age, and yet you can still clearly see that woman is fucking another class. I want to sit down with the head of the Ku Klux Klan and a series of pictures of Lisa Bonet and just be like, right, explain your lower race theory now to me, please, sir, if you could, in the context of these photographs. That's what I want to do.
That'd be fair enough.
Wouldn't it be fair enough?
A lot of bombshells this week. Lauren Bacall, Lisa Bonet.
Oh, Lauren Bacall's another one who I just have an awful lot of time for. But you don't know in those early Hollywood things. You don't know what they're like. Lauren Bacall was able to play a Lauren Bacall type. Humphrey Bogart was able to play a Humphrey Bogart type. Cary Grant was able to play a Cary Grant type. How much like that were they in real life?
Well, apparently Humphrey Bogart was nothing like that at all. He was like a super nervous dude.
Cary Grant apparently grew to hate his screen persona because people expected him to be effortlessly charming all the time.
Can you imagine?
Yeah, it'd be awful. But I feel like, because I know Lisa Bonet as the wholesome girl next door from The Cosby Show and now as the voodoo priestess, letting the gods mount her.
Is that what they say? Did someone say that at some point?
She says, yeah, the gods mounted me. But it's also from William Gibson's science fiction, The Hoss. I'll be Lord Wednesday's Hoss.
What's that?
You let Lord Wednesday ride you.
Oh, okay. William Gibson, you say.
Proper science fiction as well. That makes it sound like it's some kind of magical thing, but it's proper science fiction. But anyway...
Lord Wednesday,
but,
Barton Wednesday. I think
it's a really great movie. I enjoyed the fuck out of it watching it again.
It's a phenomenal film. Do you know who else is sexy in it? It's Mickey Rourke.
Oh yeah,
he isn't that a fucking tragedy? If you have Lisa Bonet, who has gone through her life making retaining some sense of herself as that's what I was saying. I know her as the girl next door and the fucking voodoo priestess, and I feel like there's a commonality there where she played two completely different characters, but I could still see something fundamental underneath it. I feel like I'm getting a more authentic idea of Lisa Bonet than I ever have of Lauren Bacall. Who was super sexy. And was brilliant and it was in a lot of stuff. Like she was in Dogville, wasn't she? Dogville was amazing.
I've never seen it.
Oh, am I swap it?
I haven't seen anything you throw at me, there's a good chance I haven't seen it. And there's a good chance Kat has watched it, but while she was watching it, I had my headphones on listening to fucking Yes or something, like, you know. All around the bar. What are you watching?
Lauren Bacall, I have an awful lot of time for Lauren Bacall. I think it was her in Dogville. I might swap Dogville with, I think he would hate it. It's really pretentious.
Is that recent, like, or is that an old film?
Oh, it's probably about 10 years old. Oh, shit. No, it's probably 15 years old now.
10 or 15 is all right. That's an easy mistake to make.
Yeah, but this film is not. This film is... This brings pretentiousness to another level. I definitely... I'm not going to stop for you next week. I need a lighter week this week. I had the big sleep on Angel Heart this week.
So the sleep's pretty light. It's just confusing.
It's very confusing. Is that
Brody was the... With the... Why it's, did he...
I've watched it twice. It is super confusing. I thought, okay, I'll get it. I gave it another watch this morning, and I was like, no. None the wiser.
I'm glad, because I've seen it twice and I don't understand it either. And usually that's just because I'm thick.
But I need a lighter week this week, so I've already decided.
Less heart eating, perhaps.
Yes.
And voodoo.
You are going to thank me for what I'm going to get you to watch this week, even though I'm not 110% sure it'll make for a great episode next week. But anyway, you'll enjoy watching. But
okay.
But what was I even talking about?
Mickey Rourke being
Lisa
hot.
Bonet. Lisa Bonet is someone who has gone through her life clearly adjusting to being hot at her various ages, which, let me tell you, Danny, is not an easy thing.
Who told you that?
But Mickey Rourke.
Oh, he went a very different route about that. He decided, like,
he's a strange.
How can I make myself look the most like a scarecrow?
Listen. He's a strange man, isn't he?
Well, he's a little bit like someone like Marlon Brando. Apparently, he is one of these people that...
That is exactly right.
I think acting very good comparison. Came pretty effortless to him. Or maybe he did so much work on it. And it, you know the way people do so much work on this kind of shit when they're younger, and then when they're older, it's like, man, there's no effort to do this. I think that about someone like Eric Clapton sometimes.
Really?
Like, Eric Clapton, like, not that I'm the biggest Eric Clapton fan in the world, but...
He can play the guitar.
Put a guitar on his arse and play a solo with it. Like, you know, like he doesn't really... Like when he's playing like...
I would watch that. If that was a YouTube video, I would watch that.
Somehow.
Okay, all right.
Like, but he... Like, to watch Eric Clapton play a blues solo is like watching somebody else like yawning or something. Like, you know. And I feel like it's the same with some of these lads, with Marlon Brando and maybe Mickey Rourke. And, you know.
Do you not feel like maybe he's just an intense human being? Like, when he was into the acting, he gave it fucking 110%, and that was it. And then he was into the fucking boxing, and he gave it 110%. And then he thought, you know what, I could do another fucking get rid of the waddle there on me fucking chin. And then he went 110% into the surgery.
But it opened, then, like, a new sort of avenue for him to play these weird roles, where he's like...
He could have played those roles. Everybody else in Sin City did fine just by getting some makeup.
He was in Sin City, I remember about that. Yeah.
Yeah, that was his big comeback.
That was a film. Spun was just before that. I think Spun. Oh, was it? It was. See, Spun wasn't a big film though. So I think it was like, I think Jason Schwartzman's in it, but it was people kind of going, him. Is that, who is that? Like, you know, and then
Sin City was CGI. Kind of a What an awful CGI character.
Have you gone back and watched Sin City again? I don't know if I'd enjoy it so much watching it again.
I watched it a couple of times, but no, it's a long time since I watched it. I enjoyed it. Listen, I really like those comics, but in a weird way now, they are almost...
They're kind of tainted by Frank Miller as he is now.
It's almost like I didn't realise it at the time, but I was watching somebody who I loved dearly go through a complete mental breakdown from which they would never recover.
Has that ever happened, that lad?
Well, no, but I thought he was being ironic or something, and I'm not 110% sure he is now.
No, well, hasn't he, like, isn't he, like, pretty right-wing? I saw Alan Moore on some clip. Okay. Have you ever seen that clip of Alan Moore reading out his poem that was in, speaking of poems again?
Mr. I.
It was in some kind of magazine they put together in the 80s when they were trying to get rid of that. Was there some kind of legislation in England up until the late 80s about homosexuality that they got rid of?
No, but Maggie Thatcher, I think during the AIDS crisis, Maggie Thatcher was proposing something that Moore was very, very heady. But he was married to a lesbian. What are you going to do?
They put together like a...
Excuse me, let me just make it clear. I think whether or not you were married to a lesbian, it is good to oppose homophobia in all its forms. But it is interesting that he was married to a lesbian.
But have you ever heard the poem that he wrote for that magazine?
No, was beautiful. It good?
But and it's a poem. It's fucking takes him like 15 minutes to read it. But
he was saying he wrote a novel and it came in. Fucking half the rainforest had to go for that fucking thing.
Yeah. If you were buying Alan Moore's book in paper form, you were an irresponsible human.
Yeah, and it was impractical to actually publish the thing before we had the internet to put it in. We needed the entire internet to hold that fucking novel. But anyway, go on. You will not find a bigger Alan Moore fan than me. I love that man.
Have you not read that book yet?
I haven't. No. Okay, so maybe you will.
Yeah, I think some of his fans have read it.
But do they love him as deeply as me, Dan?
Possibly not.
Would they give him a kidney, Dan?
But he...
Yeah, they put definitely together, would. What crazies.
He put together a publication of... I saw him talking about it on the other... There's all these weird Alan Moore videos on YouTube where he's doing like lectures at his local library and stuff like that.
It's because he doesn't leave Northampton.
But he seems so cool. But like he was doing this thing where he was talking about... And what?
There's a bit of the grumpy old man syndrome about him.
Yeah, but he's an old man and he's probably grumpy as well.
Yeah, he is.
He must be like 60, like, is he?
I would hate if I... Oh, he's more than that.
Is he?
Yeah, but I just feel like I would... At 60 or 65, I'm going to take stock of my life.
Jeez, you'd want to do it before then.
No, but this is very specifically at that age. And if I feel that I'm angry about anything, I'm going to pack it all in, give up everything I have at that point. I don't care if I have wife, kids, mortgage, whatever I have at that point, I'm packing it in. I'm going to live as a hobo. Because if there's anything I'm angry about, I'm a grumpy old man.
Well, being a hobo is not going to make you any less grumpy.
Maybe it will. I could get an adventures.
Like maybe it won't. You'll be
littlest,
too old.
The littlest hobo, he got an adventure.
Yeah, but he wasn't a fucking 65, out of shape man.
You don't know I'll be out of shape. Went to the gym at 7 o'clock in the morning last week.
Yeah, you're in shape now, but we're talking 30 years in the future.
You're not that much in shape. I still look
you're more shape than me, man.
Look, I can still get a good fucking handful of that.
I mean, that's alright. Seth Rogen made it okay for us all to be a little bit chunky. Okay. God bless that man.
I'm not Seth Rogen, actually.
No, but like...
Jesus Christ, Seth.
Seth looks alright, actually.
Does he? Has he lost a lot of weight?
Yeah, and he's going a little bit bald.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, me too.
I know that fucking feeling.
But I mean, I feel like at some point I kind of felt like Seth Rogen made it okay for dudes to be a little bit overweight.
Come here. I was in the gym. This wasn't...
Pause for a second.
Go on.
Alan Moore put together this magazine.
Oh yeah, I'm super sorry.
No, it's all right. Of stuff, like he got these writers to write poems and stuff, articles, for this pro gay rights pamphlet magazine book thing that he put together, and Frank Miller had written something for it, The Alan Moore says in his presentation, he's like, and like, you know, that was before he became a Nazi or something like that, you know.
Yeah, but that's Alan Moore's opinion of him. So
yeah,
I would take that with a grain of salt. I would imagine
I've heard the man talk. He's not a pleasant dude.
Frank Miller.
Yeah, he's kind of an arsehole. Like,
yeah. Having said that, I doubt he has become a homophobe all of a sudden. I would imagine that in his way of thinking, he has... He has squared the circle. He says, you know what? You don't, just because you're not homophobic doesn't mean you don't believe in strong government and well-defended borders.
Why was he square a circle? Is that just making a square?
Life demands you do that by times now.
Were you listening to this monk debate with Stephen Fry and Jordan Peterson and Michael Eric Dyson and a lady whose name I don't remember? Isn't that disgraceful?
As soon as I heard Jordan Peterson, I was like, no, I probably wouldn't listen to that.
There's a lot of people giving out about poor Dyson. He let himself down now. He made some very sort of
racist. Dyson?
Yeah, not the Hoover man.
No, I mean, I know that, but who? I assume you weren't talking about the inventor of the Hoover, but who are we talking about?
He's a prominent black intellectual. I know him from Bill Maher's program, really. But he basically played the race card, and it was a bit unfortunate. Now he's just taking an absolute kicking. But I actually quite liked a lot of what he said up to that point. Now, he was losing the audience because they're a big Jordan Peterson audience, and Stephen Fry was actually arguing on the same side as Jordan Peterson. And people love Stephen Fry, as we know. but he was making some very interesting... He had made a couple of very interesting points, and nobody's paying attention to it now because he called him a mean white man.
You called Jordan Peterson a mean white man.
Yeah, which, by the way... Would you say that was inaccurate?
I don't know enough about him, really. I mean, I've seen that one lecture that I had to watch for the podcast.
I love him. I love him deeply.
I don't have any real thoughts on him, to be honest. I
have all the time in the world for Jordan Peterson.
I mean, I heard his lecture, so I basically got a big list of all the books he's read. But
it's just dismissive. It was just dismissive of what... Basically, his idea... Jordan Peterson does a lot of stuff on individuality and the individual and how, you know, collective... Thinking of oneself as tribal or collective, tribalism.
He splits opinion.
He does, and I think people are often unfair to him. But I think Dyson made a very clear, had a very clear, very good point to make, where he said, "Look, if I fall asleep in Starbucks, somebody's going to call the police on me. That's not me choosing to be a member of an oppressed minority. That's just being told by the society I exist in that I am an oppressed minority." And that's a very good point, I think, but nobody's paying attention to it anymore because he got a bit sort of bitchy by the end of it and personal by the end of it. But I thought that's a very good one. It's a very good fucking blow to land on Jordan Peterson. Now, of all those people, I probably respect Peterson the most. I really love Jordan Peterson. I am on record on this fucking podcast as saying I absolutely love Jordan Peterson. But I also love somebody who's able to land a blow on Jordan Peterson. I respect the sportsman in me, Dan. Respects it, like, you know. Sportsman. And I think he did land a blow on Jordan Peterson, and Jordan Peterson never really had to answer that blow because he got kind of bitchy at the end and he let it go and he sort of thought, oh, I've lost the crowd, I'm just going to fucking flail out in all directions, you know, come out swinging. And he lost the run of himself a little bit, and it was a pity because I think he actually made a very good point. Jordan Peterson said, stop demanding to be an oppressed minority, stop, you know, which is grand. You know, if you're a Star Trek fan and Star Wars is oppressing you, yes, you should stop being an oppressed minority. However, he made a very good point that, you know, if a cop pulls me over and shoots me for speeding, that's not me choosing to be an oppressed minority. You know, that's a very good point. But it got completely lost and everybody ignores it now because he got a bit bitchy at the end. But I just thought it was a pity. I thought it was a pity because I thought it was a very good blow.
So this obviously was during the week, like, was it?
Yeah, it was all over the internet. I've been very carefully picking my way through irrelevant politics on YouTube because I've been avoiding Irish politics like the plague because of the referendum.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
which I think probably came out for the best in the end.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those referendums that it was a yes vote, but it's not the kind of yes vote that gets people tap dancing in the street with joy. Like, you know, it's a pretty intense subject. Like,
some people were expecting it to be, and that annoyed me hugely. But
it's not like, yay, abortion.
Yeah, I'm going to go and have 3 abortions.
It's just like, I mean.
Yeah, I know. I don't even know why I brought it up. I'm just trying to explain to you why I was in the middle of a Canadian fucking scandal.
I brought up the point that, because I had to go down to Bay State School to vote, and it was very weird voting on an abortion referendum in a primary school, with like corridors full of pictures of young kids and stuff, like, you're just like, alright, this has just gotten very real all of a sudden, like, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, look, it's a difficult subject. Let's not discuss.
Let's bounce on, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, let's talk about the way more acceptable subject of 19-year-old Lisa Bonet.
Dan!
Oh no, I don't want to talk about that again either. I was only joking.
You can't accept that there was something in you that was moved, that some worm in your soul that started fucking twisting and turning at the bottom of your heart when you saw 19-year-old Lisa Bonet. That's a form of dishonesty.
No, it's not.
It is.
No, it isn't.
She is. I literally thought the exact words when I was watching. She is so beautiful, she makes me sad. I don't even know why I feel sad at her beauty. Is it that I will never have that? Or I don't think it's something more profound than that. I just thought, my gosh, she's spectacularly beautiful. Oh yeah, but that's what I was about to go on to before we started talking about all sorts of other shit.
Mickey Rourke. There was a time when that guy, you could see that guy as a leading man, like.
Well, he was in Diner. Have you ever seen Diner? Diner's a good movie.
I haven't seen it. Is it good?
Yeah, it's definitely worth a watch.
He was in 9 1/2 weeks. He was in Rumblefish. He was in a lot of flops, actually.
He was in Barfly.
He seemed to have a tendency.
A lot of flops, but a lot of good stuff. Like, yes. Stuff that time has been kind to. Like, this was, I think, Angel Heart was a flop.
Angel Heart was a flop, absolutely. Isn't it weird? He was very fucking brave in his choices, and he was a big swinger. He swung for the fences every time, and God love him, it didn't seem to work out very often. But like you say, time has ended up being kind to a lot of his stuff.
I don't know what year Angel Heart came out in, but like what was the big box office?
87 it came out.
What would that have been box office wise?
Back to the Future. I don't know.
Obviously, nothing wrong with that. Like, you know, but
I know it's great, but it's a very different tone.
Yeah.
I mean, funny enough, they're both films that came out probably within a year, year and a half of each other, both depicting the 1950s.
Both depicting.
Yeah,
incest. Now that you say it, that was weird. That was the mid 80s incest boom.
Incest mania has swept the nation.
It's weird. They're both sort of depicting the same time period, and yet it's a completely different thing. I'm surprised. I'm very glad you like this, because this was
No, I really liked it. No, it's a great film
because it's a period piece, and I know you're not a big period piece guy.
Yeah, but it depends on the period. Like if there's like shirts with frills on them, I'm not interested. Like, you know, I'm not even that fucking interested in the Wild West either. Like, you know, I want to see people in buildings with desks and things in them, like, you know, like, or the future, one or the other.
There has to be a phone. There has to be at least a phone.
That's a good divider, actually, yeah. If it's pre-phone, fuck that.
Fuck that. How did they talk to anybody?
And preferably a phone that you pick up with one hand and answer like that, and not like a two-hand phone where you're winding the thing and
cranking it up.
But I'll take a two-hand phone.
You get one of the children to crank it up. Do you remember coin-operated electricity?
Yeah. No, I lived in an apartment with coin-operated electricity.
Do they still do that?
Some places do. Yeah, the first place I lived in Galway had a coin-operated electricity.
Fair play. I didn't know they still did that. I was thinking of that during the week.
You had to save your €2. So the thing went out and you didn't have €2 on and you were fucked. Like,
fair play. Because I recall one of the highlights of my childhood used to be being lifted up by somebody to put coins in the electric thing after the electric went off.
Was this
nannies.
In your house? Oh, in your nanny's.
Yeah. Isn't that weird? I haven't seen it since.
That's interesting. Place. I had it, yeah, my first apartment, which was like a converted fucking fridge. You know? But it was
like. So to keep the door open and the lights went off.
Yeah. All right. That's good. But what was I going to say? It was coin operated electricity.
That's interesting. I was thinking of that during the week for some reason. I don't know what put it into my head. I was just like, shit, nanny used to have fucking coin-operated electricity.
But then, like, when I was living in the Ramparts, we had the credit card one.
Oh, yeah, obviously I knew
that's
it.
Futuristic.
I knew it made a comeback, yeah, in a futuristic form.
It's actually, I kind of liked it, because you weren't getting your ESB bill. You were paying it as you were going along.
Yeah, no, I would, that's a good thing.
I think it ends up costing more.
Yeah, I would imagine that it does.
If you looked at the figures at the end of the year, you'd be like, wait a fucking minute here.
If I just had the smallest bit of discipline, I would be a millionaire by now.
Yeah, I gotcha. I think that about the fags.
But sure, like, what are you supposed to just spend? I bought, like, Mojo magazine the other day, and I was just like, I could read this for free online. Why am I buying it? And it's like, I don't know, because maybe the people who make it get paid, and that you can fucking eyes away from a screen from a few minutes.
Fair play. It's interesting. I hadn't thought about the Back to the Future thing during the week, but that is, it is two different visions of 1950s. It's interesting because
Mickey Rourke's 1950s, he's been followed around by a saxophone player.
Quite the sousaphone player. But I did think of It. Which is a period horror.
Yeah, yeah.
And how much I loved Angel Heart and how little I cared about It, even slightly.
Well, I liked the first part of it with the kids in it.
Well, the film was all kids.
Wait, what are we talking about now? Are we talking about the one with Tim Curry in it, or the one we saw?
The one that came out a while back.
Oh, right. I enjoyed it well enough. Like, I hadn't really felt compelled to watch it again or anything. Like.
No, I thought it was a bit shit. But it was very 1980s. You could tell that they went back and looked up 80s fashion and 80s cars, what films were on in the 80s.
Yeah.
And they'd done that kind of stuff, and they created a perfect 1980s. But if that's the 1980s, then it's not really the 1980s.
Well, you see, I saw an interview with someone who thought, like, maybe it might have been a Back to the Future DVD extra or something, where they were saying to make something look like the 50s, you kind of have to make it look like the 40s.
Well, that's exactly what I was thinking.
You know, because it's not like everything, like, you don't step outside your house and everything's brand spanking new. Like,
exactly. You know? But I think in It, everything looked like the 80s.
Yeah.
Whereas in Angel Heart, you had a load of rusty old vans from the 40s.
Yeah.
And there was... And it's not even just about rusty old vans and shit like that. It's like some guys... Like, I have fucking... At some point 10 or 15 years ago, I decided, yeah, a shirt and jeans and fucking runners. I didn't remember consciously making this decision, but that's what I wear.
Yeah.
A shirt and jeans and runners so that anybody will say, yeah, millennial hipster. Till the day I die, that's what I'm going to be, right? And there's guys like that in 1950s that in 1941 had decided, yeah, okay, right, from now until I die, this is what I'm wearing.
I made a pretty definite decision about what I wear as well.
Make a definite decision?
Yeah, I wear like a jumper, a t-shirt under it, sleeves rolled. I like rolling my sleeves up for whatever reason. Cords or slacks. Slacks are easier to find. So, and runners. I wear the same thing every day.
Did you make a definite decision though?
I arrived at a point where I was like, okay, I seem to be wearing this a lot and it seems to work for me. So, yeah. Because I was in a band and stuff like that, I always struggled with clothes because I like, cool what? Clothes don't look cool on me. Like, you know.
Because I worked in a factory, I always struggled with what?
But no, because I was on stage and the guys that I played with had really definite styles. Like, they looked like musicians, like, you know. Anybody and I would wear, I went through a phase of wearing, like, polo shirts and, like...
Long hair.
This kind of stuff.
Did any of them have long hair?
At times.
Oh, suck my hairy fat one, sir.
No.
No, they should. They should.
Oh, I thought you were talking to me.
It's just, I don't know why I said that. That was a ridiculous thing to say. But at the same time,
I've always, like, when I was growing up, you know the way people have pictures of themselves, like, oh, that's my new romantic phase, or that's when I was a goth, and that's when I was this. When I was younger, I just wore whatever my mom bought me.
Well, so did I.
You know, I didn't, like, and sometimes she made unfortunate decisions and tried to buy me things that other kids were wearing, and they were always just, like, a little bit wrong.
Massive belt buckle.
Or X-Works jeans with the fucking, you don't remember those?
No, what were they?
Or Eclipse jumpers or t-shirts or whatever. Do you remember those?
No. All right. What were Eclipse?
It's just like a make of t-shirt.
I remember one time a fella came round to the door selling tracksuits out of the back of his car, and mom thought, oh, Jesus, that's great. She bought us, like, she had three kids. She bought us each, like, three tracksuits or something. There were great deals going, so she fucking wrote a check and bought the three tracksuits. And we went into school the next day, and literally everybody was wearing the same tracksuit.
That's brilliant.
That's exactly like that.
When I was a kid, people were into getting the football jerseys. I'm sure kids are still into it. But like, I was kind of a Leeds fan at the time or whatever, and I never had the real jersey. I know my dad would always, if he was in Leeds, buy me those kind of fake ones.
Right.
Where instead of saying, like, Adidas here, it would say, go Leeds or something, like, okay. Or whatever. Like, and I was always had these fake ones, and people would kind of rip the piss. And I remember getting my first real one that was, like, way too expensive for a fucking t-shirt for a kid to be wearing.
Yeah.
It's probably like £30 or something. I went, and it was the day of a school tour, and I went to school with it on, and everyone was wearing something else. Someone literally said it to me. He's like, why are you wearing a football shirt, man? Nobody wears those anymore. They were all wearing their X-Works jeans and stuff. And literally that moment, I was like, I can't fucking keep up with these people. Like, I don't know what the fuck people wear. When I was in bands when I was a teenager, everybody's wearing Combats. My dad bought me a pair of Combats. They look fucking ridiculous.
I remember the Combat phase. It's just, obviously you just thought you were
like, no, I didn't feel like myself. It felt weird. Like, and if you look at, like, Literally, like, in all the pictures of me playing in a band as a kid, everyone's wearing combats except me. I'm wearing, like, blue Dunn's jeans and a Leeds United shirt.
I like a pair of jeans. I'm wearing slacks now today, so it crushed me. But I like jeans. Normally I would wear jeans.
I don't own a pair of jeans, actually.
I only fucking bought these for Kayleigh's confirmation, specifically for Kayleigh's confirmation.
But no, that I just, like, yeah, things to wear, I've, like, never quite landed. It's only now that I've landed on something that works.
But
do you know who I kind of got it from? Who I kind of like how they look? Larry David.
No, I knew it!
He looks cool.
No, he doesn't.
He does.
He looks the opposite of cool.
But that's... I like that look. I don't like... he wears fucking blazers and stuff. I couldn't do that, like, you know. But I like a jumper with the sleeves rolled up.
But did Mickey Rourke not look cool in Angel Heart? And he was disheveled. He was positively disheveled.
Yeah, well, he...
You could see in the Louisiana bits, he had just these huge fucking sweat marks under his pits. Like.
Yeah, yeah. But so did Marlo.
Yeah.
Same as, like...
But it's... That's cool, isn't it? I kept coming back to the Angel Heart It dichotomy. They are basically films set 30 years before they were made. And one of them terrifies me and one of them doesn't. And I think it's because... in It, it turns out it's basically a kind of a spider clown that's behind it all that you can hit with a stick.
It's true, yeah. And so you're going to have to fucking fix that in the new one.
Like. Five prepubescent kids were able to hit it with a stick hard enough that this cosmic menace vanished back into eternity. And in Angel Heart, it's just not that simple. Like, no. It's...
Well, you can't run away from yourself.
Exactly.
You're the problem.
You're the problem. The evil is in you. And there's like a lot of fucking moments throughout it where there's like the fan is this constantly recurring image where the fan turning and then suddenly it will sort of slow and start turning in the other direction. And you're like, it's not even the fan. It's not even a matter of hitting the fan. It's whatever force is moving the fan. There should be nothing creepy. There should be nothing scary about that. But in the film, it shows you. It makes you feel like, oh my god, the fan is moving in the opposite direction. This is disaster. So the laws of nature are being corrupted here. There's nothing you can do. Like,
it's a terrifying ending because this man, through no fault of his own, now has to spend eternity in hell.
Yeah. It is absolutely awful, and there's nothing he can do about it.
No.
It's not only it's not his fault. There's no action he can take that can fix this.
One of the last scenes in the film when he goes back to his hotel room
and
Lisa Bonet's been killed.
Oh my god.
Unless that fat policeman.
Unless that's not your gun up a snatch.
Oh god, it's fucking...
It's awful. It's awful.
And then it's like, how do you know her? And he's just like, she's my daughter. It's like when he's run away from, like, I know who I am! I know who I am! And he's running away, and then he runs all the way back to his hotel room where he's staying.
The problem is he does know who he is, and that's the first time he's actually outright admitted.
He dumps that lad in the gumbo.
Oh, God.
That was, everybody's eyes gets all fucked up when he kills them for whatever reason. They lift him out of the gumbo. He's got, like, soup running out of his eye sockets, like, you know.
Oh, it's disgusting. It's a very graphic, gory thing. Isn't it weird?
But it's brief. You just see this brief fucking, you know.
That's true, but it is very graphic and gory film. The murders are not fucking soft soap.
No. It's not like the Marlowe.
Yeah, and exactly. And
a lad falls over. Like,
exactly. You know. It's grabbing his chest. It is a peculiarity to me that in the midst of all that absolute inhumanity to your fellow man, what push the censors over the line was a sex scene.
It's not just any sex scene though, Niall. It's a sex scene with a teenage girl where it's just like blood being splashed around the place and he tries to choke her.
Yeah. And in fact, it's not even as just any teenage girl. It's one of the most beloved teenage girls in the world at that point.
She's a fucking Huxtable.
She's a Huxtable. You can't do that to a Huxtable. For Jesus' sake, is nothing sacred.
You can choke a Huxtable. It could happen to you.
We're at 2:09. We should probably jump off.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
I feel bad. I don't feel like I've given a good show today, Niall. I apologise. Mm.
Neither do I, but sure. Dan, I will say this. We admit it when it happens.
When we don't pull it out of the oven, we just don't.
This is still in the oven, I'm afraid, folks, and I'm sorry for you. Yeah. And I genuinely am sorry, because Angel Heart is one of my all-time faves.
We did pick up a little bit when Angel Heart came into it. So I'm going to have to...
I love that film.
Maybe I'll have to go back to an old favourite for next week, Niall.
What's your old favourite?
I want you to listen to R.E.M.'s first album, Murmur.
Their first album?
Their first album.
It's funny enough, Friday night I was telling somebody about a school tour I was on in 96 or 97, where all we did was listen on repeat to Automatic for the People.
This album is not Automatic for the People.
That's interesting.
This is a trickier beast.
Oh, it's a good, crunchier
well,
kind
it's
of a
back
thing,
when it? Michael Stipe wasn't really writing lyrics and was just kind of making sounds. Well, no, they sound like words, but when you actually try to discern what he's saying, you're like, oh, I don't know.
It's like Alec
Pilgrimage, it's momentum.
Gammon, something about gammon.
No, you'll know what I mean when you listen to it. Right, it's indiscernible what he's saying.
Murmur.
But it's as beautiful a thing as you're likely to encounter.
All right, I'm happy to give it a go. I, as I said, felt this week was all a bit heavy. Not this episode, but I mean this week as a rule.
Yeah.
And
it was rough going there for a while.
And this week, yeah, you saved that last episode, fair play. But I want you this week.
Oh, I thought you meant just last week as a week in Ireland.
As a week, yeah. Just as a week in Ireland, that's what I meant. But this week I want you to put your feet up, make a cup of tea, a nice cup of sweet milky tea, and I want you to have a watch of Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Oh, sweet. All right. That's a good one. Dirty Rotten Scoundrels and R.E.M.
I just want to be guaranteed 90 minutes of pleasure this week.
Has it been a hard week?
It's just been one of them weeks.
Yeah. The last couple of weeks have been a bit like that.
Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Well, I mean, R.E.M., it's not like fusion jazz or anything. It's still recognisably R.E.M., but it's a very... is nascent the right word?
Nascent R.E.M.
Yeah.
That's weird because
I think it's as good as they got.
I think of R.E.M. as a band that boiled themselves down into R.E.M. soup. R.E.M. leftover sandwiches. R.E.M. Yeah. Day After St. Stephen's Day sandwiches.
They kind of did.
Yeah, I feel
same way Oasis did as well. Like,
oh, I think it happened.
It happened quicker than R.E.M. Yeah, R.E.M. in 20 years or something.
Like yeah, that, I like R.E.M. well enough, but
this is like, you know, it's such a good album. We'll get into it next week.
Do you not like Automatic for the People?
I mean, I don't dislike it, but I don't like Everybody Hurts. I don't like it's very emotiony. You know, is the answer. Like,
you cold fucking fish.
I like. Come here and try to wake her. Come here and try to wake her. I'm standing up.
What, do you even like Dirty Rotten Scoundrels? Do you have a heart at all?
Well, I can't remember whether I liked it or not. It's a while since I've seen it.
Danny.
What? Listen, I'm giving you Murmur. You're going to... literally, like, the best thing R.E.M. ever did. Unfortunately for them, it was their first thing.
That's always a cruel mistress, isn't it? I feel that way about Neil Gaiman. He's talking in the International Writers Festival, but I feel like
that's kind of all he does now, is talk about how great he is.
All I want to do is ask him a question about Sandman, and it's the first fucking thing he ever fucking did.
Was like, it not Good Omens, or...?
Oh, look. His first great work was Sandman. And compared to Sandman... his last great work was Sandman. I consider myself a fan of that man. But his entire career since 1994 has been pale imitations of Sandman, basically.
So, you're not going to see him?
It would be an insult to him, and I wouldn't want to insult a man who I, to a great extent, respect, but feel he would not feel I respected.
Okay. You're sparing him, then.
I'd just be that poet arguing with the publisher.
You don't know what you're missing. You published my various sonnets. The public is just waiting to eat them up.
We're going to go next week, Murmur by R.E.M. and Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. Steve Martin and Michael Caine. Is that correct?
Frank Oz, yeah, absolutely.
Frank Oz. So, thanks very much for listening. I feel like I need to apologize for this week's episode. I was not on my game.
Neither was I super much.
But
however, I got in a bottle and a quarter of whiskey in me. A naggin and a quarter of whiskey. Yeah, a naggin and a quarter of whiskey, not a bottle and a quarter of whiskey.
Like two cans of Heineken in.
Oh, I'm sorry. Have I passed obnoxious station and not even realized it?
No, I don't think so. I'm not finding the obnoxious anyway.
Okay, good enough, because some of that Lisa Bonet talk was... Do you know what? Even if it was drunken honesty, it was still honesty. That woman is fucking amazing.
Okay, well, I mean, you can hear this before it goes out in case you want to...
Wrap it up, Dan.
Alright, listen, thanks very much for listening, and we will talk to you about Stipe next week.
Woo!
Running down my spine, cut the baby, taking off her clothes.